a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes!
Yes! The teams you live for, the sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig, presented by G2G Bars on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Hey, everybody, welcome to your Wednesday. And it's awesome. You know why? Because football's tomorrow. BYU Utah State tomorrow. See? The old wagon wheel. We're excited about this one, man. We've got all sorts of things to bring on the show today. But that, you know what's interesting, Scott, is we get so used to the Saturday, maybe a Friday game here and there. A Thursday game really sneaks up on you in a week like this. Like I mean, we're just going along doing the show, and then suddenly I go, oh, shoot, we're down in Utah County tomorrow. We're doing pre-game, post-game, all of it, man. So
well,
it's
once the season
big
starts,
deal.
it keeps
it rolling.
It's Christmas, basically.
Yeah.
That's how it all works, and those games, yeah, they jump right up on you.
So
speaking of a game jumping right on you,
yeah, what do you got?
Utah coming out at 12 o'clock on Saturday.
You like the earlier games, right?
Well, for me, yeah.
For you personally?
That's a selfish reason.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying, is that like this game – and that's a bummer because it's on the Pac-12 network and it's noon. And that should be a game. By the way, you see that one on the schedule, you know that's going to be a good game at the beginning of the year. Is that why the Pac-12 stole that one? To put it at noon?
Actually,
they
look at that game as not a good game.
What are they? What?
Yeah.
Because
it's got
Oregon State in it?
They look at, you know, the good games are going to be Utah against Oregon, Utah, USC, USC.
UCLA.
Yeah. You know, all of those, you know. Utah, Colorado, all those rivalry games are...
Man,
are,
watch out for the Beavs, dude. Yeah. All those rivalry... Utah, Colorado, did you sneak that in there?
I did. You didn't even listen.
It's because I hear Colorado and I just... poor Carl
Durrell. Well, it's a rivalry game this week. I mean, you got Utah State and BYU, big rivalry game, wagon wheel game.
Oh, sorry. I was waiting for Jeremy to hit that, that thing again when you said that. Sorry. But that's more tongue in cheek. That's a tongue in cheek symbol crash.
Yeah. Yes. But you know, this game is, or I think Oregon State's a good team. I find it fascinating how the Pac-12 this year is kind of respectable, and Oregon State, a team that everyone goes, that's a win. Like you play Oregon State, that's a win, and it's not a win now. I love how these schools, except for Stanford, Colorado, and Arizona State have decided they're going to be good.
Well, look, we're just going to be good, okay?
Yeah, they
team on three.
Whatever.
That's all they need.
They've improved. It's awesome.
Let's jump into the show as we always do at the top of the hour. We get to the cut. Let's just get right there, baby.
There we go. The other question. Undeniable. Unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
All right, as usual, the show is brought to you by G2G Bars, all natural ingredients, no preservatives, plenty of protein. G2G Bar is perfect for anybody who needs that quick, tasty, nutritious boost. You can find them at Associated Food stores. You can find them at your Mavericks, your Holiday Oils, and your Costco's, among other places. Fantastic protein bar. Give it a shot. G2G Bars, sponsors of Unrivaled right here. Now, Scott, I wanted to, when somebody says this is a revenge game, we talked to Devin Kaufusi earlier in the week, and he said that. He goes, oh, yeah, it's a thing. And, you know, wanting to get a team back is fine, but is it just one of those storylines you have to tell yourself, like, no, this is a, we've got a, that's part of the, what you always talk about, where you have to manufacture an edge, manufacture a grudge, manufacture some sort of a motivation in a week like this? Or is it reality? Well, is, man, I guess every team in front of them has got to be a revenge game since they lost to Florida.
Let me give you a manufactured motivation. Colorado is our rival.
That's manufactured?
Right. That's, so you can see that's manufactured.
That okay.
But this one is, like, the foundation of Kyle Whittingham's program is defense and run defense. And to get run up on for 260 yards, that doesn't sit well with anybody. Anybody. And you know, it's all ego. Come on. That's what it is. And it's like we got embarrassed and we got beat at the thing that we actually do well. So Morgan Scali, Kyle Whittingham, not going to be happy. And quite frankly, there's a lot of guys on this team that played last year, and they were embarrassed. I mean, you remember talking to Devin Kaufusi, and he goes, they got up on us, and they got us. And they beat us at our own game. And so that's something that will not sit well. And that's a real motivation. And you absolutely want to redeem yourself, answer that. And I think the biggest motivating factor for Utah this week is mm-hmm. that revenge that they got us last year and we're not going to let it happen this year.
Well, and part of it is, I mean, you have to manufacture something every week. Because every win matters now for Utah. If you're talking about huge goals in front of you, and a win this week, just like a win next week and the week after, keeps them in the conference title race. And if there's any semblance of playoff consideration, if there's any semblance of you being able to get to that number four spot, you there's no slip-ups the rest of the year.
Right.
And so that revenge factor might be almost a revenge, too. Like, we lost to Florida. We've taken it out on everybody because now there's no – we have nothing. Everything is in our way. Every team now is in front of us. Utah last year, even though they lost to Oregon State, I mean, they only lost one conference game, and that was it.
That was it.
And so you know that there's that wiggle room typically. Like, you win the conference with one loss almost always, or at least you're in the conference title game with one loss.
Well, if you look at the conference and you look how the schedule rolls out, You know USC's better. You know Oregon State's better. You know UCLA's better. And that's the next three games. You don't know how good – no one knows how good USC is. No one knows how good UCLA is. You know, and it's very possible they could be a little overinflated right now. And it's very possible Oregon State could be underappreciated, that maybe people aren't giving them – quite the respect, because they did a number on USC.
Right.
Like, it wasn't...
They had it dialed up, man.
They had it dialed up. So when you're Utah, you look at what's happened in the conference over, what, the last 4 years? Oregon has always been in the mix to determine who's going to win the conference title. And guess Utah plays at Oregon late in the year, second to last game of the season. And you remember it was the same thing a year ago. They played them late in the season a year ago, and you're going to have a similar type of thing where you want to win the conference. I still think it goes through Oregon if you're Utah. The sad part is that game against Florida, because it puts you in that bind when you talk about, you know, just you can't lose a game now if you're going to go play for the playoffs, and that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Every single week to be up to have a great game because it just never happens. You have a flat night. You just do.
And it's about weathering that storm. Last year against Oregon State, they had a flat night and they couldn't turn it around.
They just couldn't. And the crazy thing is Utah was like – started out where Utah, I think, went up 14-0 or 10-0, and then they got a punt block for a touchdown. And that just changed the whole swing of everything. And then it just kind of fell off the handles. Now, Utah was shorthanded in the secondary, and Oregon State was doing this motion that created an adjustment for Utah in its secondary, and they couldn't adjust to it. And so their run support was was non-existent from the secondary, and they were way depleted at that point. And so I think it'll be a different thing. You know, Oregon State hasn't been running the ball as effective, you know, but Utah's going to be ready for this
game. You know, I forgot about this game, except for the fact that there was a loss. And you remember Oregon State actually kind of – they scored a bunch of points. They
yeah.
42 points. Utah was up 14-0, like you said.
Yeah.
They were up at the half 24-14.
Yeah.
So they were, like, kind of still in control there.
Yeah.
Oregon State has a 3-touchdown third quarter to Utah's 7 points in the third quarter.
Yeah.
Everything swung in the direction in the second half.
Yep.
I mean, they score these – I mean, they're up, and they go into the fourth quarter, and then suddenly it's 42-31, and Utah's playing catch-up, and they just couldn't do it the rest of – and then Oregon's just grinding, doing the thing that they do, those offensive linemen just shoving people around. And they ended up racking up almost 500 yards of offense. And it was weird, too, because – we were watching this game, and Chance Nolan was almost, I mean, he was like 14 for 18 for 220 yards and
because they could run the football.
And they, yeah. Right.
I mean, when they're one dimension.
Right. And so they have this thing where you go, man, but everything they did was based off of Utah's mistakes. Like, so, Utah right. was scoring all that. Utah was just rolling with this thing, and you thought it was going to be same old, same old.
So a thing that happens in college football, and you watch it every week, and it's fascinating to see happen, you have a team that has all the momentum. And that's really what was going on in that game. And then all of a sudden, the team with all the momentum goes, we have this in the bag. It's almost like everyone in the team thinks the same thing. Oh, we got them now. It's over. And the minute they do that, you just kind of lighten up. And when you lighten up, that team, they just keep grinding. They keep, and then all of a sudden, some big play happens or something. You know, you have a breakdown, and all of a sudden, the momentum shifts. And like once it shifts in college football with most teams, it's so hard to ever get it back. In the pros, it's different. You know, you see battles back and forth.
Yeah, the swings are
and people they're mature enough to understand how to combat. You know that. Momentum shift, you know, much better than in college football, and it's just fascinating that and Utah just could not figure out how to just bring it back, how to just, you know, get the engine started, do something different, you know, change it up a little bit, and they just, you know, they just got out momentumed in a game, and it's a real thing, and those are the nights you got to figure out how do I get the momentum back, and one of the best things to do is to just change everything up, go no huddle, you know, change tempo, do something, and it becomes a very effective tool. And I'm surprised more coaches actually don't do it.
So one thing they keep talking about is the slow starts that Utah's kind of had, including last week to an extent, right? Where you're kind of going, all right, what's up here? Like, what's going on? How does that?
Well, Utah scored 14 points in the first quarter,
right? But I think that. Their whole thing of, like, we've had slow starts to the season, to some of these games. Yeah. And so changing that narrative, how do you do that as a team? Having a 14-point quarter against Arizona State's a big deal. But, like, in a game against Oregon State, like, you have to come out. This team, by the way, has the best, besides Florida, maybe the best secondary that they're going to see.
Right.
Certainly so far, and maybe over the entire season. That secondary is legit. I mean, this Oregon State secondary is really, really good. Their defense is really good. And so, and you and I have both been impressed by Jonathan Smith every year that we've chatted with him, every year at Pac-12 Media Day, and then they turn it around. Their first winning season in, I think, 8 years was last season, and they get to a bowl game.
Well, so to change momentum or to get off to a fast start, Utah last week consciously did it, and they went up-tempo, no huddle, and I love it. I love it for so many reasons. I think it's an important key to this game, and I think it's something Utah should do. What happens is you start at 12 o'clock, and that's early, and so it's like, let's get going.
Yeah.
Right? And going up tempo early on offense is a great way to say, all right, we're out of bed, we're here, we're gonna roll. The second thing it does is it gets everyone involved in the game early. You get a lot of people with touches early, and then they just tend to be more engaged in the game. They tend to come through in big moments later on in the game because they're in the flow of everything, and that means wide receivers, tight ends. You're going to have a new tight end in the game now who's going to be starting, and you've got to figure out how to get that guy or all of the production, because I think the production replacement for Keithy is going to be a tight end and wide receivers. I don't think it's going to be a person's going to replace Keithy. But then the other thing it does is it gets Cam Rising going. And he has struggled early, and he's kind of had nervous feet. He's kind of been a little bit inaccurate, a little bit indecisive in some of his reads. And when you get him up tempo, he just kind of dials in a little bit better. And then it's a quicker transition for him, because once he gets locked in, he's pretty tough. And you need to get him locked in early in any game. And so I love the idea of going up tempo, and there's a lot of really, really good reasons why you should do it.
I look at what this team, what Utah has to do now to kind of convince everybody else that they are, you know, I don't think the onus is on them to really, you know, show that, like, hey, we're good, because everybody kind of knows that. It's about whether or not.
Isn't that weird, by the way? Like I'm on the radio with these, you know, the Pac-12 Sirius guys. I'm on the radio with Joe Beaver, you know, and Corvallis.
Yeah. Every week somebody calls you to talk about,
and,
you know,
the game. Yeah. And everyone has respect for Utah. It's not faked. It's not like Utah's turned a corner in their respect from teams from the Pac-12. It used to be, boy, when you play Utah, man, it's going to be a tough physical game. And it's like, now it's like, you know, this is the team everyone realizes best team in the conference. And
they
like
still the, say the physical championship thing, but that's an addition.
No,
to.
It's a, it was almost a slight. It was almost like, yeah, we're not, you know, it's they're tough.
They're not very athletic, but man, they're tough.
Right.
Like that was.
Yeah.
It's a different thing.
It's a different story now. And it's just an interesting thing how that's all shifted.
I wonder, too, like with Kyle Whittingham, and every game now is precious, right? I mean, for Kyle, because I think that we probably don't
that
realize.
That sounds like precious, sounds like a Southern backhanded.
Hey, isn't that every
so
one of these
precious.
Guys is precious?
Aren't they just a
no,
precious
I mean, like,
little team right
I think
there?
I think he takes seriously
precious,
the fact that.
Like, man, they're under so much pressure
listen,
right now.
Think of how much just in the last week since Morgan Scalley got his big bump in pay again. There starts to be that thing in the back of your mind, like Kyle Whittingham's not going to be here forever. And I know that the extension, wherever it went to, it's probably not going to get there. You and I have talked about how this is, we're looking at single digit seasons at the very, like low single digit seasons that Kyle Whittingham's going to be around.
You know what Kyle Whittingham has?
What? A Harley Davidson, a Porsche.
I don't know. Probably.
Yeah, he does.
No.
He has all those.
Like I want this deal. I want this deal. When I retire, when I'm done.
Yeah.
So he's just going to, when he's ready to leave, he's going to leave. That's his situation.
For sure.
They're, like, he's on the coldest seat of any coach, and, you know, he's just yes. like he's
earned it too.
Yeah, no question, right? But it's like he's going to get almost $1 million consultant fee after he's retired.
What do you think the consulting entails?
That's what I'm laughing at. It's like, yeah.
We got a weekly call with Kyle. Kyle, what do you think about the game? You better win this one. Talk to you guys next week. Yeah, you got to beat this USC team.
I find that so fascinating. It's like he'll probably have an office, probably come into his office like once in a blue moon just to, you know.
If you're getting paid $1 million, I feel like the cool thing about that is the pressure's off of you. The pressure is entirely off of you.
Nobody wants you around. Nobody wants you around.
Really?
No.
Like Morgan Scalley wouldn't value him coming in every once in a while in one of those meetings.
Nope.
How so?
Because you don't want the all-time winningest coach in Utah history. You don't want to have to hear, well, you know, this is the way I would do it.
Right. You don't want him poking your nose and stuff.
When Kalani finally, you need to take the training wheels off. You need to become your own person, your own personality. Every coach is themselves. And when you're authentic to who you are, that's when you're going to do well. Kalani was trying to be Lavelle. I firmly believe when he started, he's such a good example of someone just finally, like, I'm just going to be me. It was a cool moment, if you know, regardless of your affiliation of who you root for. And he just said, I'm not doing it this way. I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to be me. And I'm either going to go down with the ship, but I'm going to be true to myself. And so you don't want – it needs to be, you know, because Morgan Scalley's going to be the coach when Kyle retires. And it needs to be his program. Kyle Whittingham was different than Urban Meyer, and he's different than Ron McBride, and he's different than, you know, he's Kyle Whittingham.
There's that part that makes you think that, at least in my mind, that Morgan Scalley won't be different, actually, from Kyle Whittingham.
Well, no, I mean, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. I mean, he was...
But there's going to be a moment where he's going to have to be...
Morgan Scalley hasn't known anything other than Kyle Whittingham.
Yeah.
He's never been in another program. He's never... You know, he's. I mean, he was coached under Urban, but as a coach, he's always just been there with Kyle, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you know Bob Stoops and the whole Oklahoma thing where he was bent, you know, with Lincoln Riley because he had been groomed to understand the Oklahoma culture, and then he left it, and there's. You know, and that actually, I think, is a good thing for Utah, where you create this continuity. They have a process. They understand. They know how to succeed in, and you keep that continuity there.
Think about how
for decades it could be a really
good
thing.
That's really what it is. And you know, dependent upon, of course, whether or not he wins, and assuming that he would be the head coach afterward, which we all kind of do. Think about how much these programs across the country are swimming and trying to find head coaches all the time. Like big
Colorado,
all the schools, not just Colorado. Yeah. Think about Florida. Florida has a hard time finding a good coach.
USC.
USC
UCLA.
Finally. Yes. These guys are, and for Utah, you've got Witt until that's done, and then you've got Morgan Scalley, who likely is just going to carry that torch on too. I mean, it'd be interesting to see. Kalani at BYU. Like right. BYU has, not that they don't have any idea how lucky they are, but, like, honestly, if you were to think about Kalani not being at BYU next year, the future looks bleak because it's so hard to find a guy who could be a BYU guy who could be the head coach.
Yeah.
So it is a good time. This is a good time to be a Utah fan, good time to be a BYU fan. All right, we'll take the break here. When we come back, we've got more to go here on the program. We will we'll jump in. We've got some things to talk about when it comes to these TV deals that are trying to be made on the side here for you to be able to and conference expansion is still a conversation. Things that are going to happen across the Pac-12, the Big 12, the Big 10, when it comes to those media rights and when it comes to expansion, whether or not more teams are going to be added, more teams are going to be subtracted. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about that. Hey, homie, finally, the real estate the way it should be. Full service, local agents, and you'll save thousands. Homie is a better way to buy or sell. Homie.com is the website, homie.com. We'll come back. We've got more to go. Stay with us. Unrivaled continues 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. We'll come back. More to go right here. It's Unrivaled 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
You know what time it is?
Your home for the best football coverage in Utah is on the KSL Sports Zone. The Utes square off against Oregon State in a massive Pac-12 showdown this Saturday at Rice-Eccles Stadium. Your home for the best coverage of Ute football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hut, hut, hi. This is Unrivaled, presented by G2G Bar on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with the show. It is Unrivaled 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell, Scott prepping for Utah, Oregon State this weekend. We'll have the radio call. And then tomorrow, my heavens, tomorrow, BYU and Utah State scoring off against one another. That game's right on top of us. We got to get this thing going. We got to talk more about this game. Jake Hatch and I will be doing the Cougar pregame show right after Scott and I do a two-hour edition of Unrivaled tomorrow from the Murdoch Hyundai there in Linden. So we're going to take the General RV there down there. We're going to fire this thing up, and we've got a football game on a Thursday, which is interesting, too. I was thinking about this, and I was wondering if this Utah State weekend with BYU Utah State always happens on that conference weekend. And I think we asked Dave McCann about it last week. I was like, is the Big 12 going to go, hey, we don't really care what's going on with the church's general conference weekend. We have a Big 12 schedule to put together. Do you think that they'll honor that and go, hey, Friday, we'll do that game on Friday? Or BYU will play every Friday that first week?
I would absolutely 1,000% think they would honor that. And the reason is there are a lot of religious schools in the Big 12. And, mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't see. You know, you have TCU, you have Baylor, you have other schools. Did I miss anyone?
You got TCU, you got Baylor.
Is there anyone else? SMU's not in the Big
Kansas 12. Is a big religious school, isn't it? Private religious institution. Jeremy's like over there. He's like googling. I'm like, no, it's not. It's a joke.
Oklahoma State is.
Oh
though.
Yeah. Everybody had that religion. Everybody's religion down there is football. That's why, right, I was like, exactly. It doesn't matter whatever their affiliations are.
I think. Look, we live in a world where having respect and appreciation for people, their culture, their religion, their race, you know, that's prevalent on everyone's mind. And you know, I don't know that it's much of an advantage for BYU, but it's certainly something that has been well established. You know what I feel about the game though with BYU and Utah State?
What?
It feels kind of melancholy. It feels like this is going to go away for a long time.
No, it will. And that's the thing, is that like I was reading an article on KSL Sports today about that very thing, about how Blake Anderson's like, who's been in this rivalry exactly two times now, right, counting this year,
yeah,
is like, this is a friggin' bummer. This thing's going away. It's a big deal for these schools, but it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work right now. Now, it could work, but I think that there's a little bit of that idea of, because my heavens, Wyoming is on the schedule going forward, right? You can find a BYU schedule. I'm trying to look, because I was like, oh yeah, they just signed up yesterday for Southern Illinois, right? Which is an FCS.
Really?
Is Southern Illinois an FCS school? Yes, it is.
Well, maybe.
I think the FCS teams need to be 1,000% obliterated from all division. The FBS team should never play an FCS team again. I know people are like, well, it helps their economy in the FCS. I don't care. Because there are games across the country that should be played rather than that FCS game.
Well, I think a lot of people are recognizing, you know, that's why there's expansion, that these better games earlier on in the year. And it's, I mean, think about it, people. This is like, television runs this. Television doesn't want garbage games at any point in all of college football. They don't want garbage games. They don't even want games in a conference where the teams stink, you know, and I know people are like the Big Ten and the SEC. Folks will tune in even if it's Vanderbilt. Folks will tune in even if it's Illinois and Indiana. You know, folks will tune in for that because they'll watch a Big Ten game no matter what it is. I don't know that I fully believe that, but I believe that that's what people say that it is.
Hold on, can I ask?
So you can't have garbage games anymore.
Jeremy, are the Sam Houston Bearcats an FCS team also? Or they might be moving up divisions, but
what are they going to go to the SEC?
They actually got an invite to the Big Ten.
They are going to Conference USA.
So they're
going to
be in Conference USA next year? So that technically will be an FBS team, sort of. But BYU plays Sam Houston and Southern Utah next year. That's on their schedule. Those are their two. Those are the, and then Arkansas. Those are your non-conference.
I think it's a little bit more out of respect for Utah State, in that BYU says we're not doing our front-loaded Power Five schedule. We're doing a complete season of Power Five.
Well, but it's not a respect when the school's going, let's freaking play it. What's the problem?
Because you still have to be ranked. Like your ranking still is going to matter with an expanded college football playoff.
So in 24, you're looking at Southern Illinois that they just signed up for. I know that they just signed up for, and they're already playing Utah on the schedule. And so you could have had
Utah. They'll get out of that game.
Utah.
Well, you know why they'll get out of that game?
They're not going to get out.
Right, because they'll be in the conference at that point together.
That one is one that they are like, hey, we're back on the schedule. Don't do this. Don't do your big timing thing. This is what I'm saying. This is what I'm talking about.
What do you mean they're talking about?
No, Utah's got to get out of that game. It's up at Rice-Eccles. Can you accept that?
No, wait. They're going to get out of the game at that point because it's going to be a conference game.
You're talking about the Utah?
Utah and BYU is going to be a conference game.
I see what's going on.
Utah's going to end up in the Big 12.
I got to keep up. I'm sorry.
So I'm in the room with you today. Are you listening to me today?
I was getting...
Are you on another channel?
This is where...
Are you streaming and I'm like on ESPN here?
We're split signals. I'm on 1280, you're on 97.5. Okay. No, but that's what I thought you were saying was my low self-esteem BYU thought went straight to, are you trying to take us out the schedule? Because they're so used to getting that to Utah trying to. I thought you were doing your usual big timing thing. So on BYU's schedule for 24 is Southern Illinois, Utah, and Wyoming. So Wyoming and Southern Illinois can both take a back seat to. And I know that you're honoring some weird home and home that you have with the Wyoming
is
Cowboys.
Is Wyoming a road game?
Yes, it's a freaking.
Wow.
Aren't you guys on the road this year? Isn't Utah on the road this year? Or no, next year to Wyoming, right? When is it that they go to Laramie?
No, that was a COVID game.
I think both of these are 2020 issues.
I think they're out of that, like, whoever scheduled that game.
That guy got let
phase
go.
Phase of their their existence.
That guy got let go. Okay, so but here's the thing. So BYU has, I think we said the Miami game's going away, right? That Miami, but either way, they're playing Utah Tech basically 2 years. They're playing Utah Tech and Southern Utah over the next 3 years.
So 2025, 2027, Wyoming versus Utah at Wyoming.
Yeah, there you go.
At Wyoming.
That game's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Be in the same conference?
It's going to be a neutral. It probably could be true. It's going to be a neutral site game in Las Vegas.
That's all that Vegas needs. Come down this week as a Utah Wyoming.
$25 tickets.
So 24 is BYU. Yeah, that game's getting played, man.
How far away is 2025?
That's 3 years from now. Because you're trying to do the math on whether or not you're gonna if you're gonna like retire or something,
gotta
like,
graduating or something, wedding in place.
Yeah,
yeah. What is the date on that one too?
When am I get to go to that? Yeah. Oh, please tell me it's a November game. It's got to be in the front. Yeah. Shoot, I wanted so bad for Scott to have to go to Laramie in like late October, early November. That's like my dream for you. Okay. But see, this is the 2028 BYU football schedule, which of course is always subject to change. Their three out of conference games. This is what I want: Miami, Utah, Ole Miss. Those are the three games currently on their schedule.
That's awesome, but it ain't happening.
But why does it? But the Utah State game. Why does that have to be relegated in place?
Utah State's too good.
A Dixie State. What is it? Utah Tech. It's not about whether or not it's too good. Of course.
Utah State is too good.
What did Utah get out of that Southern Utah game? Because after we finished that Southern Utah game, it went, yeah, I have no idea.
Okay, so
it was a waste of time.
When you stopped listening to me a minute ago because of the big time thing, here was what I said. BYU now has a Power 5 schedule as a conference. So every conference game is against a Power 5 school.
Right.
Now you can argue how good those schools are. It doesn't matter. You're playing that caliber of a team. Ugh. So you want your non-conference not to be very good. I mean Georgia, Alabama, all of them have garbage, you know, non-conference games. And you want that because you want to have as high a ranking as you possibly can. So Utah State, they're down this year, but they're pretty good a year ago. You know, they're a team that has the potential to be too good a team to play in your non-conference.
I here's the thing is when you say, gosh, it's such a shame we can't play you. And then they go, no, you can't because you're on the schedule. You look right past them and go, it's just been a real shame. And then they move straight past it. And that this game.
Here's another thought for you.
And I'm not even like a huge history guy on it. I'm not like, this game has always been played. You have to play it. What I'm saying is that there's something way more valuable to the fact that you have a team right up the road that you guys have played before, and it isn't, and it's not a conference game.
Utah State is not BYU's rival. Come on.
No, they're not. No. I'm not saying that.
So why?
But they've played 90 times.
So what?
All right.
I mean, BYU's played San Diego State that many times, or Wyoming, or, you know.
They've only played Wyoming 75
the
times.
The rivalry is Utah. You want to have a game out of conference that has some meaning. Utah and BYU is the game.
And they're already figuring out ways to not play that game too.
Which is stupid.
Okay. I just, you know, I think my beef here is not about whether or not it should be just Utah State. I just cannot stand the FCS games being signed up. Because every year we go, yeah, we didn't really learn anything about this team. And for BYU, the Utah Tech game in November, It is so hard to have a game like that in November. And they've had a bunch of these, and it's just it's really hard to get excited about those games.
We're a month into college football, and now we're starting to get into the interesting games.
Yeah, and that's the tough part, because BYU plays their most interesting games at the front end of these independent schedules.
Right.
And so the tail end is tough because it's not as fun late in the season. And I got a lot of people yesterday who were, you know, coming at me on Twitter going, it doesn't matter. You play to win the game, right? And these are just important games because the fans, it's important for these fans in these games to win every game. That's what they have to look forward to. I'm like, yeah, but it's not much to look forward to. That's why conference play is going to be so much better when BYU's in the Big 12 next year.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
All right. Bring the Utah State game back in place of these FCS schools. That's all I'm saying. Or somebody besides these FCS schools. I'm sick of it. All right, let's take the break. We'll come back. We got more to go here in the program. When we return, we've got ourselves a I still want to talk about the – we've got what are the odds, but I still want to talk about this, about the additions of some of these teams that are being talked about in conference expansion. Did the word Rice really come into this conversation, Jeremy? You did that because you're a Houston guy. Oh, come on. The Rice Owls being a part of this conversation, I don't know how. We'll come back. More to go. 97.5 KSL Sports Zone. Now the Pac-12, and then back to the Pac-10 again at some point. Their only Rose Bowl win was in 1942 over number two Duke at that time. And the game wasn't even played at the Rose Bowl. It was played in Durham, North Carolina because of the fear of an attack on the West Coast after Pearl Harbor.
Fascinating.
So the Rose Bowl 1942 was played in Durham, North Carolina, and that's Oregon State's only Rose Bowl victory. For big-time banking with a home team feel you can count on, Zions Bank is for you. More to go around the corner. What are the odds? Next, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
What are the odds?
Okay, sir, the bet is to you.
All in, baby!
You'll know exactly.
More or less.
What's going to happen?
This is 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Hi, welcome back. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Yeah, that's you learn something new every day. The 1942 Rose Bowl was played in North Carolina. Like, that seems so off. But, you know, now that we've gone through COVID, that almost seems normal, right? Where you're like, oh, hey, they had the Rose Bowl, but it was in North Carolina. But that one was because of the fear of being attacked on the West Coast after the Pearl Harbor attack in 1941. So that's the only they've won the conference four times, Oregon State. So watch out, Scott. All right. So
I'm watching.
What are the odds? Goes like this: we give you a scenario, you give us a 0 to 100% chance that thing will or will not happen. All brought to you by the folks at TryDayTrading.com. Now anybody can be a day trader. Visit TryDayTrading.com. Scott, what are the odds that some back issues that Tua Tagovailoa is dealing with? And he's, I don't know if he's questionable. Is he listed as questionable for that game, or is he a game-time decision? What's the deal with Tua? So he's not actually, he's not feeling great. But what are the odds then he plays Thursday against the Bengals at Cincinnati?
What are the odds?
Mm-hmm. Dealing with some back tightness.
Yeah, that sounds like a code word, dealing with some back tightness, because mm-hmm. he kind of had some head issues there. I'm gonna say.
He says he's going to try to do everything he can to play. Oh, back and ankle?
Back and ankle issues. Mm. Wow, that sounds like a lot.
Oof.
I'm going to say it's very, very low.
Oh.
I'll give it a Brett Favre, may he rest in prison in peace, 4%.
Just think about the weird 4%. Just think about the weird paths that of all the paths that could have been carved after their careers,
yeah.
guys who were, you know, your contemporaries, right? Mm-hmm. These are guys you played with. These are your peers.
Yeah.
And he would do anything he could to change spots with you, Scott, right now.
Yeah.
Would you take over for me in prison, Scott, while I do this radio show? That'd be real nice.
Boy.
So there you go.
There have been some real criminals in the NFL.
I'm going to go with
bad
a
dudes.
Jim McMahon 9% chance
okay.
that he plays. Because they keep saying, know that if he doesn't play, it's because he really couldn't. That was like the quote that you keep hearing. No, no. If he doesn't play, just know that he really
well, what,
could
would
not
there
do
be
it.
Another reason?
No, I know. I think they're trying to say that's... that like he might not. He probably isn't going to play, and it's because he actually really is pretty hurt. You're not going to fake it. The Dolphins need this, man. But I think now with that, the possibility of him being out, I think it's a foregone conclusion that the Bengals get this one from the Dolphins. What are the odds that the Pac-12 is a conference in 3 years, Scott?
What are the odds?
Yes.
Ooh.
I think it's pretty high. Come on. This is negative Jeremy throwing this one in here. That's what happened there. That's Jeremy being very pessimistic.
Well, but it's because there's a lot of talk these days that the Big Ten is expanding, and they're expanding because
they're
trying to get into the streaming business.
Jeremy,
if they get
into
the streaming business, they got more revenue.
No.
And they get more revenue, they can bring on more teams.
I think they're going to be around.
I don't. I think Pac-12 is over. So what? They exist in 3 years? What are the odds? I'll give it a what's his name? Matt Ryan 2% chance
wow.
Pac-12's around.
I'm going to go with a Pac-12 guy because Matt Ryan was a Boston College guy. I'm going to go with a Matt Leinart 11%.
Okay.
I just wanted to say.
You don't think it's very good either?
No, I think it's higher. I think it honestly is good.
Oh, you just wanted
fine,
to say
a junior
Matt
Leinart. Say off 55%. There you go. Yeah. Was Ronnie Lott still 42 when he was at SC?
I think so.
No. Either way, I'm saying it's high. I think it's higher. I think that it's a group of powerful universities that are going to try to do everything they can to stay together, and they'll probably make something work.
Isn't it better with like four conferences, though?
Just four, you mean?
Yeah, than five.
So what are the four?
Big 12, Big 10, ACC, and the SEC.
SEC. Huh.
Yeah.
Would Utah fans be okay with that? If it's their only option, they would.
If you're in a conference and you're playing good teams and you have a chance to go – I mean, you may have a better conference. Look, if Washington, Oregon leave, and you may have a much better conference in the Big 12 than if you were in the Pac-12.
All right, I'm going
to
go with
and you got a chance to compete to win the conference too.
Yeah,
I mean, be competitive.
Okay, what about this one? What are the odds that BYU and Utah State, who by the way are not on each other's schedule at all in the near future, what are the odds they play a game by 2030? So in the next 8 years. That BYU and Utah State find a way to play one another on each other's schedule?
I will say a John Randall 93%.
You think
chance.
They'll figure it out?
Yeah,
huh?
Come on. That's 2030's way too. That's too far away.
It's not actually.
It is. What is it? 6 years?
No.
No, it's 8 years.
8 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No. See, I was thinking I'm 54.
You start doing the retirement math. You start going, oh, hold on. What
so
am I not going to be?
54.
Yeah, you're like, who cares? I'm not going to be here.
2030? That's 8 years?
Games. Yeah. Oh. You'll be around.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that it's actually low. I'm going to go with a Max Thule 31% chance that they end up playing each other. Because now Utah State's doing like, well, we don't really need you either. Fine. And then BYU's doing the... Well, we got a bigger fish to fry. We feel like we're in the big. We feel like we're in the big time now. And when you're in the big time, this is the kind of move you have to make. What are the odds that Donovan Mitchell, Scott, does end up playing defense in Cleveland?
Well, define play defense.
He's going to work hard now.
I mean, does he?
Now he's working hard
because he played defense here. He just played it really poorly.
I think somebody put the numbers out in Locke. We're going to have David Locke on. The numbers are out, and his defensive number was. I think he was ranked 8th on the team. In defensive rating,
yeah,
and he's one of the better players on the team,
yeah.
Anyway, bad deal. Everybody saw that quote in their dog and Donovan. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it was that. I don't think it was a slight at Utah. Like now, I'll play defense because I like being here. I don't think it's that. I think it was a genuinely bad way to approach it. And I think that he made a lot of effort. And if you watch Donovan Mitchell play, he made a lot of effort.
I know you're supposed to give a thing here.
Yeah.
But now he's saying he's going to play defense. I mean, what?
Now I'm going to play.
Why didn't he say it when he was here?
This is the thing that that's making everybody grumpy.
Right, and it should. And if he's not going to play defense here, then you don't want him here. I mean, then it was a great move, wasn't it? If he's all of a sudden, you know, well, I was in Utah and I was just upset and mad, so I wasn't going to play defense.
You're mirroring a lot of what the people are saying today.
Well, they should
say glad that. We got rid of him. Good. Yeah. We don't need you. And then they cry themselves to sleep
so,
tonight
so
on their,
can
on
I,
Donovan
can
Mitchell
I,
pillow.
Can I abstain from a vote?
Oh, okay. That's a first time, Jeremy. Write it down. September 28th,
2022. Can I give like a I don't care?
It's a not applicable. An NA.
1% chance he plays better defense.
I mean, it's kind of weird because it's like,
how's that?
Are you going to noticeably? Are you going to make a noticeable difference? They have his game. His game is set. The way he plays is set. So if you suddenly are going to make a defensive part of your repertoire, you're going to make a lot of people grumpy. All right, we'll come back. When we return, we got to chat a little bit of BYU with Matt Biamonte. We usually do it on a Friday, but since it's a Thursday game, we're going to chat with him on a Wednesday. So Matt Biamonte joining us next on the program. Talk a little bit about. A look back at the Wyoming game, plus a look ahead at this wagon wheel event that's happening on Thursday. So we'll come back. More to go. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes! Yes!
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig, presented by G2G Bars on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
If that game is closer than 20 points, I'll wear a cowboy outfit to the next home game at Lavelle Edwards Stadium in the press box.
Welcome back. It is Unrivaled 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone, brought to you by G2G Bars. All natural ingredients, no preservatives, plenty of protein. That was the voice of Matt Biamonte back in May when we had Matt on the program and we rolled out what this Wyoming game was going to look like. And I don't even know why we were talking about it in May. That's how desperate we are in the postseason to talk about football, right? Is that we're going, hey, Matt, break down that Wyoming game for us. And then we look at each other and go, I don't know. Is that what we're doing?
Well, we were probably breaking down the whole schedule.
Yes.
And,
yes. You know. And then Matt rolled out that little tidbit, which is if BYU loses then or wins by less than 20 points, he would wear a cowboy outfit into the press box. Matt, for the sake of being professional, I don't want to like get you in trouble with BYU because you'll get looked at weird if you show up to the press box looking like that. So what is the actual plan to go through with the bet and still stay professional?
Well, I have a cowboy hat.
Yeah.
That's making it in. So I'm going to wear jeans. I'm going to wear, I think I'm going to wear a plaid shirt, tuck it in, wear my biggest belt and the hat. I was thinking about growing a mustache, but I can't grow facial hair fast enough. So that's not going to make the cut, but I think I'll be close enough to paying it off.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Yeah. No, I think
just grow the facial hair as far as you can go.
Just get a splotchy
facial.
Scraggly peach fuzz
situation.
Going
I've shaved this morning, right. So I have nothing.
There you go.
I'm sorry.
All right. We'll accept it. As long as you walk in, you've got to carry the hat around and you have to say howdy to at least 10 people. Okay. That's
good. I'm wearing the hat all day. I do my post game video with Mitch, I'm wearing the hat.
That's good.
You have to.
Here's the thing, though.
You got to own it, man.
Yeah, you do have to. Yeah. You have to put up with the bet, and that's about it. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that Wyoming game, and your thoughts on how that thing turned out. I think it felt real. Just it was kind of out of step. It felt inconsistent. I know that a lot of the officiating was weird. But on top of it, it just didn't feel like BYU's been clicking on all cylinders, and that's kind of what Kalani Sitake said this week, too. He really hasn't seen a totally put-together team yet this year.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Maybe the South Florida game's the most complete game they've played, but the first half was a lot of what we saw in Baylor and Oregon, where they could not run the ball, and they had a hard time stopping the run. And then in the second half, it was really good BYU football. I thought they ran the ball well. They stopped the run well, and then they had explosive plays too, which was something that had been lacking in especially the Baylor game or the Oregon game and a little bit in the Baylor game, just the chunk plays. They have that long touchdown pass to Ikonu Hill. They have that long run from Miles Davis. So that second half of football was very good. Defensively, I still think the one area of concern I have besides the run defense is why aren't they creating more turnovers? It's just there's been opportunities to create them, and they haven't recovered fumbles on muff punts. There haven't even been a lot of opportunities for interceptions. So I am talking about the lack of turnovers. But the second half was encouraging, and if that's how they can play against Utah State, then it will be a very comfortable win. I'm not going to put a number. No bets on this one. No numbers, no bets. But Utah State is not playing well right now, so BYU should win comfortably. But, yeah, I do think they're still searching for that complete game, if there's such a thing. But they haven't been anywhere near it the past couple weeks.
Come on, Matt. Double or nothing. You have confidence. Another cowboy hat.
No.
Costume.
God, you cannot make me do it. I don't even know what I would wear, dress up as if I.
Yeah. No, at that point, you have to throw in some.
Suspenders and no shirt.
Yeah, at that point, you have to bring a baby cow into the booth. You have to have some chewing tobacco. They're just going to make the whole thing go together. Just do the full thing.
I'm curious. I want to go back a little bit. I don't think we had an opportunity to talk to you about Dallin Hoker and him transferring. Well, I was just curious to get your thoughts on. Why do you think that happened, and what do you think the impact of that is?
If I had to speculate, and I love to speculate, so I will. I mean, he talked with KSL Sports. He was texting Mitch, and he gave some clues as to why. But I think the reason he's leaving BYU is he doesn't like his role. He's number two, and even number one, Isaac Rex. I mean, he's been the starting tight end now for 3 years. He's not getting that many targets, that many receptions, especially the past 2 years. His total numbers are below 25 catches in the past 2 years. So even the number one tight end for BYU right now is not being featured. Now, I think there's a pro and a con to that. The pro is Jaren Hall is distributing the football to everybody, and the wide receivers, it's really balanced. And I think it's really hard to defend because he's not targeting one guy double-digit targets every game. So you can't necessarily key on everyone. And that's why you're seeing Chase Roberts' big game against Baylor, against Wyoming. It was Keanu Hill. Braden Cosper's had some nice moments. So I think it's really hard to defend because they're really balanced. But it makes it hard for the second-string wide receiver or the second-string tight end to feel like they're a useful part of the offense because they're only getting targeted three, maybe four times a game. And I think Dallin just felt like Isaac Rex is still tight end number one. And in the past couple of weeks, too, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but there's been a lot more three wide receiver sets with Cosper, Roberts, and Keanu Hill, even with, and throw Puka in there, and Gunner's coming back. So they're not even using two tight ends as much as maybe we thought they would. So he's not getting a lot of snaps, not getting a lot of targets, and probably felt like this isn't the role I signed up for, and it's not going to showcase my skills, so I have to go somewhere where I can. And that's the part I disagree with a little bit, Scott, because you don't have to have gaudy numbers to make it to the league. A lot of times, guys who just test well and don't have great numbers end up getting drafted. There's stories of quarterbacks who like rarely even play and get drafted. I'm thinking of Matt Castle from a while ago, but you can make it to the league without having big numbers, but it's hard to fault a kid for wanting a bigger role and wanting to play more. So that's what I think it ultimately was.
Jaren Hall having a career day for him last week, and it still felt like BYU hasn't hit on all cylinders. Feels like he kind of is, though, and certainly every week he's been facilitating guys like Keanu Hill, guys like Braden Cosper, guys like Chase Roberts, and all those guys are going to be playing. And then add in Gunnar Romney. What does a weekend like this look like with Utah State? They are not very good at defending the run game. So maybe this is one of those that BYU can get some confidence and push some guys around, or do you want to see another 300-plus type day for Jaren Hall and his wide receiver group?
I would always love to see a 300-passing-yard day for a BYU quarterback because that's what BYU football is. But this is a great opportunity to get the run game going. And BYU, it is crazy how many quarterback injuries they've had against this team in the past 10 years. You're talking Taysom Hill multiple times, Jaren Hall, Baylor Romney. I mean, the list is long. And so with that knowledge and with the opportunity to maybe get the run game going, I would lean so heavy into the run. I don't want Jaren Hall throwing it more than 20 times. And if things go the way that maybe they could go, you're playing Jacob Conover in the second half. So I would, with Utah State not being a good run team, and even though the run game appeared to bounce back last week, if you take out that 70-yard run, it's just an okay running game against Wyoming. It wasn't anything special. So I would use this opportunity to try and just pound the rock. And now with Miles Davis emerging, you've got three guys. Get them all 10 carries. If you can get double-digit carries for all three of them so they all feel like they're a part of the offense and maybe keep Jaren Hall healthy in the process, that's what I would do. I would just run the rock.
So Utah State, they're doing terrible right now. I mean, they're not playing good. And you're talking about getting Jacob Conover in the game in a second.
I've heard a couple people do that.
Come on, you have got to believe that BYU is going to win by at least three touchdowns.
You quit it.
You got to believe that, Matt.
Hey, I believe it. I'm just not predicting it. There's
What's the difference? Believe and predict is like, you know.
It's the same. Put your money where your mouth is, Matt.
Yeah, come on.
You got to dress up like a pioneer next year after the Utah State game.
Put a bonnet on you. That's what it is, a bonnet.
When Scott takes me to Valters to pay off last year's BYU Utah.
Oh, hey, there you go.
Oh, hey.
Was that a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Jeremy, pull that up, my friend.
Jeremy's like, I think we're all involved.
I think Scott's, the archive.
I think Scott's taking everybody to Valters.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's how I'll be familiar with it if it includes us all. Yeah,
yes.
I'll look for it.
That's we're looking forward to that one.
Yeah. Kalani has mentioned that he doesn't think that BYU's played its best game this year. What does the best game look like? I mean, is he right in this? Well, what's the best game look like then?
He's frustrated.
What do they need to do better?
I wouldn't even think of it as a score thing. I think a best game for BYU would be 500 yards of offense, 200 of those at least coming on the ground. And then defensively, I think you would need to at least force two turnovers and have a third down percentage of sub 40%. So you're getting off the field. And if you were to do those things and hold your opponent to under 150 rushing, I think that'd be a perfect football game. You don't have to blow them out, but, you know, Jaren Hall's been playing great. Jaren Hall's been carrying the offense. I mean, they just have not had a running game since the South Florida game, and then they had a little bit against Wyoming. But if Jaren Hall hasn't been playing great football, I mean, his numbers are on par with Zach Wilson's year in 2020 in terms of completion percentage and touchdown to interception ratio. And some people think that might be one of the best individual seasons and quarterbacks played at BYU, and Jaren Hall's on pace for that. So he is playing outstanding football, but he hasn't had the complimentary run game, and then he hasn't had a defense that's been forcing turnovers and giving them extra possession. So that's what I think a perfect game would look like. But, you know, when you have an individual playing that well, you can overcome some of those things, and that's what we've seen.
I just take the lead from players when it comes to the topic of – you know, whether or not this game is important kind of going forward. And the players love the in-state rivalry. At least they say they do. They call it that. They call it an in-state rivalry. And I'm not going to say that Utah State is and BYU is the type of rivalry game that Utah is ever, right? But when this game goes away and I see other games on the schedule that Utah State could easily slide into and play that. Well, I want to see BYU sign up for a game against Southern Illinois yesterday. And Utah State's not going to be on the schedule for the foreseeable future. I get a little bit grumpy because I'm like, you shouldn't be playing that FCS game in place of a Utah State game going forward.
I'm with you 100%. It's just this is what college football is right now. Now, the thing that I think gives maybe some hope to that scenario is with the college football playoff officially expanding and there being six conference champion winners automatically getting in, I think we will start to see a little bit of a trend towards better non-conference games, which would open the door for more of a BYU-Utah State or a BYU-Boise State more often than we currently have. Like Kalani's been on the record saying, we're going to sign up for these games because, you know, that's what college football is right now. Well, if like Alabama and Ohio State can get rid of the FCS game and plug that in with another, it doesn't even have to be a Power 5 game, but it just plug that in with another game, then I think this could open it up. And the other thing, too, and I'd love to see this down the road, now that the playoff is in place, maybe all these conferences will eventually get on the same page in terms of number of conference games being played. And if everyone would play eight, I think there'd be more
fun games that people would be willing to play, like this rivalry game, knowing that it's okay if we lose. We'll go to Logan. It's okay. Because if we win the Big 12, we're going to the college football playoff, and that's okay. So I'm hoping there's a little course correct towards this. But right now, it is – I'm with you, Alex. It's frustrating because my perfect BYU schedule would be 8 Big 12 games, rotate Utah State and Boise State, get the Utah game in there, and then get a couple interesting games against Power 5 teams. You know, and it doesn't have to be anything crazy, but if they had a schedule of Utah State, Utah, Minnesota, and South Carolina, and then 8 Big 12, that's awesome. And if everyone was doing that, I think the TV partners would love it because you'd have great non-conference games, and then everyone would play the same number of conference games. But we're a long ways away from that, but that's a long way of saying I wish this game was going to be played more frequently after this.
Another report came out about Amazon and some of these streaming services going after these bigger conferences like the Big Ten and the SEC and those conferences wanting the revenue from those services, which would further, I guess, incentivize them to expand. So now these talks again are of – Oregon, Washington, Cal, and Stanford going to the Big Ten. And then it also brought up Utah, Colorado, and the Arizona schools going to the Big 12. Do you like a scenario like that? Do you like that Utah and these other schools would end up in the Big 12? And then it kind of forces a rivalry, you know, forces people to get along in the sandbox and have to play each other?
I don't like it. I don't like the idea of super conference. Here's the other thing too, that like the SEC, like Texas A&M and Georgia have like hardly played each other because there's so many teams down there. And because they play their division opponents every year, you don't get to rotate through and have these great conference matchups that people would love to see because there's so many teams that even get worse. I get it from a money perspective, but man, if Oregon or Washington could be in the college football playoff 5 times a decade, I don't know. I'd have a hard time giving that up, but money is ruining the sport. There's no other way to put it. And I'm just crossing my fingers that the expanded playoff will save it a little bit, but you know, it's, I don't want to see it. I want to see the Pac-12, Pac-10, whatever it ends up being. I want to see that survive. I don't want conferences to go to 20-plus teams and because, yeah, they'd make a lot of money, but USC and Ohio State are going to play each other, like, what, once, twice a decade? Like, that you could do that already with just non-conference scheduling. So I hope that doesn't come to pass. I don't want to see it. Do you? No. I think you would want the Pac-12 to survive, right?
Well, sure, if the Pac-12 can survive, but if not, you know, I love the Utah BYU rivalry and I love it when it means something. You know, that's when a rivalry is exciting. When you got two teams vying for a chance to win a conference championship and go to the college football playoffs, or you have an opportunity to spoil someone's chance to do that. That's what rivalries mean to me. And I think that's the bugaboo right now with this rivalry is that, you know, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean what it used to mean. And having these teams play each other and, you know, and even if you could put it in a clause, you know, there because there's some discussion about that, keeping some natural rivalry games intact all the time, I think, you know, would be something that would be appealing to a lot of people. So I'm actually in favor of it.
Interesting. Well, from the Big 12's perspective, it's a no-brainer because if they can add some quality teams like Utah, Arizona schools, which
and Colorado,
you know, and Colorado – that would strengthen the conference because you'd be adding more quality teams. And so I think it makes sense for the Big 12. I think the Big 12 would love to do it, but I just like the idea of the original conferences. And I know that that's a pipe dream, but if we could end it where it is now with the expanded playoff, that's what I would prefer. And yeah, you wouldn't have BYU and Utah battling for a conference championship, but I don't know why you can't play that game every year anyways. Especially with the incentive that, hey, the loser, it's not over for them. But you know, I don't see that happening, unfortunately. But that's what I would like to see happen.
I think the line on this game tomorrow night is 24 points, right? It's a big one. And I don't know if that's more – I think it's – what's been more surprising this year that, you know, Utah State having the reverse turnaround from last year has to be one of the bigger things that shocks, I think, that we've had here locally.
It's stunning, especially offensively. You look at Logan Bonner's numbers these past two. He had a game where he threw below 40% completion against Weber State. I mean, that's wild. This guy was, what was he, 5 in the 60 for 60? I thought that was a little bit high, but, you know, he was definitely a good college quarterback last year, and he's had 8 interceptions in the past 2 weeks. So their drop-off on offense has been the biggest shocker to me. They were a dang good offense last year, and they're just a bad offense right now. So that's been one of the bigger surprises in college football.
Matt Biamonte, you can hear him on Cougar Sports Saturday on Saturdays on KSL News Radio. And, of course, tomorrow, BYU versus Utah State, he's going to be wearing a Cowboy outfit up in the press box. So, Matt, thanks for hanging out, man. We'll see you tomorrow, Cowboy.
Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow. All right, have a good one, guys.
All right, there's Matt. That's going to be interesting to see how –
If I owe him dinner at Volter's, I'll pay him dinner.
Can
That's
I come?
A true thing.
Can I come? I'll pay for my own dinner.
I don't care.
I feel like we need to go. Dinner. Have you been to Volter's, though?
Yeah.
Jeremy, it's a classy place.
Yeah, but I think we should do it.
Oh, you're saying we should – hey, Jeremy's got a good idea. Have Nate pay for it and go unrivaled team building.
We probably
experience.
Shouldn't say that over the air, but yeah.
No, I'm laying the groundwork and then saying we talked about it on the air.
I got to email him, so maybe I'll get this clip just in case.
Sure. Yeah, you've got to email
I'm feeling
him?
A little isolated in my workspace and a little uncomfortable, I think.
We had some team building. We want to reach across aisles with KSL News Radio. Matt's going to come with us. Yeah, see? That's good. Plus, with Walter passing away recently, be a good way to honor him.
Yeah.
Us going there. All right. We'll take the break. We'll come back. More to go on the program when we continue. We've got a lot to chat about here. Oregon State head coach Jonathan Smith talking about playing Utah this week. We'll roll out some of his audio from his press conference and get you ready for Utah and Oregon State coming up on Saturday. All right, more to go. Stay right here with us. Unravel continues 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
You know what time it is?
Your home for the best football coverage in Utah is on the KSL Sports Zone. The Utes square off against Oregon State in a massive Pac-12 showdown this Saturday at Rice-Eccles Stadium. Your home for the best coverage of Ute football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hut, hut, hut. This is Unrivaled, presented by G2G Bar on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Welcome back, everybody. It is 97.5 the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. The wagon wheel. I've had the chance to hold the wagon wheel. It is heavy. It's heavier than one would think. It's in BYU's offices typically. I mean, when it's there. Currently, it's there. So the wagon wheel. This is a little piece of wagon wheel history there for you, Scott. And it's going to be sad. They played 90 times. BYU's won 50 of those. Utah State 37. They've tied 3 times, so... Just a little, I'd like to bring in a few of these tidbits for you. Because I know you take them to heart. I know you go home and think about them as soon as the show's over.
Yeah.
You're sitting there in your bed laying there at night and you're thinking about Utah's game and then you go, yeah, but what about the wagon wheel? What if that thing goes away?
Do you know what happens when I sit in my bed at night?
You fall straight
Fall asleep. Gone.
Okay. All right. Here's the deal. Utah... And Oregon State is going to be facing off. Oh, I got to give away tickets first. Jeremy told me to give away tickets. So why don't we do that? We've got a 4-pack. Ooh, I love it. Not a pair of tickets. This is a family 4-pack of tickets to Real Salt Lake and the Portland Timbers that are coming into town on Saturday, October 9th. October 9th, Real Salt Lake and Portland Timbers. I've got 4 tickets for caller number 12 right now. Caller number 12 right now, 801-575-ZONE. That's 801-575-ZONE. 801-575-9663, a family 4-pack of tickets to Real Salt Lake and the Portland Timbers on Saturday, October 9th. That's a good deal right there.
That's a great deal.
Family 4-pack, sometimes we don't do that. Sometimes just a pair. This one, take the whole crew. Let me see here, Scott. Oh, yeah, so Jonathan Smith. You and I have talked about how impressed we've been with Jonathan Smith as he's taken over. Former quarterback at Oregon State. And he was on that that 2000 team that ended up, I think they ended up number four in the country. That was their highest. That was their highest finish in the AP poll. Was they finished number four that season? And Jonathan Smith was part of a winning program.
I think he's been one of the best coaches, best coaching stories in the Pac-12. Or Oregon was dead in the water. Oregon State was dead in the water, and he came in there because I thought there's no way anyone's going to turn around Oregon State. And when you have someone who has a vested interest, you know, he's an alumni, it means something more to him. When you have a coach and a program in a program like that, I just think that commitment to it is more, and you find a way to win, you find a way to turn it around, and I love what he's done there. Love how he's created an it's very similar to Utah. He created an identity. He's gone in the transfer portal, and they've chosen wisely out of the transfer portal, and it's done a tremendous job.
All right, so right off the bat, he was asked at his weekly press conference about Cam Rising. So that's the first thing that he went to was how good of a quarterback that Cam Rising is.
They're similar. You know, they're talented. The guy's a good decision maker with the ball. He's accurate. He's athletic. They run him a little bit. He'll pull the ball. He's got some great experience now. Knows that offense inside and out. You can tell that at the line of scrimmage, he's getting him in the right play. Can make it physical in the run game and then the action pass. You know, he's got all of it. He's a big-time player.
Similar to Caleb Williams, I don't know if that's the comp that I would have pulled necessarily.
Well,
but
I just think it's, you know, understanding the offense, and you know they're two very different types of players for sure. But they're guys that make plays. I mean, both of these guys have the ability to throw the ball and also run to create offense, and they do it effectively. And so, you know, you could see that again. It's, you know, I think that's a genuine feeling from Jonathan Smith.
No,
about
I think
his assessment.
Everybody knows that Cam Rising is a threat. Like when he's on, I mean, he's the Pac-12 reigning champ quarterback. I mean, right. Like he owned teams when he was in his best space last year. And so when you think about the games that he's had, he's not lighting up the scoreboard. But that's not really ever been his thing either, too, Scott. I mean, I don't think you're not waiting for
it's
him to.
It's not Kyle Whittingham style.
No, I know.
It's not Andy Ludwig style with offense.
This is about right for him.
He's playing in the system about as well as you could.
Yeah.
He's done great.
He's got on the season, he's got 10 touchdowns and two interceptions so far this season.
And the one last week, I mean, it went right through Solomon Enos.
Right.
If Solomon Enos catches it, it might run out the backside for a touchdown.
So he's about 250 a game when it comes to the yardage, and his rating is pretty darn good. He's been really, really solid. What he is he's not. Here's the thing too about it. It's kind of this mix. He's not a game manager. He is as big of a threat with his feet as kind of anybody is as a quarterback. So Cam Rising is a real problem for teams because he'll beat you with his legs, and I'm glad that Jonathan Smith obviously recognizes that. Yeah. Here's what he said about their running back. You think about Utah and them using multiple running backs. Well, Oregon State's in a little bit of a similar situation.
Yeah, we've done something similar the last few years. The rotation piece, some of it's dependent on the play that's called. Some of these guys' skill set fit a particular player. They get the reps at that play. Especially early in the season, early in the game, we do like to get a little rotation going so they can not get worn out in the second half if we get a guy with a hot hand. And so I don't think it's a hindrance. If a guy continues to separate over the next, you know, 3-4 games, then, yeah, maybe we'd have the one lead back. But we feel good with all three guys.
Utah's kind of the same way, all three guys.
Yeah, but there's a lot of validity to, you know, keeping guys fresh, not only in the second half of a game, but also throughout the season. And you always are like, yeah, it seems like you kind of tip things off a little bit if a certain guy came in and he was like only running, you know, certain plays. But Utah you've seen this happen where they'll play most of these guys and then someone will emerge, right? And this has been, for Utah, Tavion Thomas had already emerged, and so he had kind of become the guy. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how well Tavion behaves, you know, the rest of the year if he's not in there. But Oregon State, basically what Jonathan Smith was saying, we haven't found our guy yet. I mean, that's really what he's saying.
Yeah, you don't run three guys because you're like, they are just all three so great.
He's waiting to find his guy.
And that's interesting, too, because Utah has talented dudes running the football.
Yeah.
But, like, they should have one guy, and they've been inviting Tavion to be the one guy. He was the one guy at one point last year. And it just is like has not totally fired up this year for him. And that was a concern.
It's been a little awkward.
That was a concern that I remember you had in the preseason. You're like, how much does Tavion buy into this year?
Right.
Does he buy into it this year like he did last year?
Buy into the team, buy into the commitment, the preparation, you know, I don't know. And it's still a question. It's still a question mark for Utah. Really, who is the running back and, you know, and who is going to establish himself as that guy this year?
I was reading this thing, and there was a guy who was commenting on the Pac-12, and he said, it's the best that this conference has been as a whole in years. Transfer quarterbacks, new coaching have all elevated play. And that doesn't necessarily always – that's not always the case. Mm-mm. Transfer quarterbacks – by the way, the quarterback position, they were talking about how insane it is in the transfer portal, how many quarterbacks have switched around teams, have changed teams. And it might work in the opposite direction. You see this not work for a lot of teams. You've seen it not work for Utah. You've seen it work for Utah.
Well, a year ago, Anthony Brown goes to Oregon, and it looks like it's going to work out early. And at the end, it really didn't work out. And now they've got Bo Nix.
And it looks like it's working out early.
It kind of looks like it's working out early. But who knows where it's going to end up.
Okay. All right. But do you think that's true, though, that this is the best the conference has played in years?
Yeah, I think the coaching changes with – 100%, yeah.
Is it mostly just skewed by the fact that USC's playing well? It's like, the whole conference is doing well because USC's doing
Washington
well.
Washington didn't play well a year ago.
Yeah.
And they're playing a lot better. Oregon's playing well. But you also have teams like Washington State. I mean, Cal's actually playing quite well. It's a majority of teams are playing well in the conference as opposed to maybe one or two.
Here's Jonathan Smith heaping praise on Kyle Whittingham. You talked about them being similar in the sense that he came in, he established something, and certainly Kyle Whittingham would be a good role model for coaches to look after, and Jonathan Smith really likes him.
You know, what he's done, he's created an identity, both sides of the ball, the style of player he recruits and develops there. Really smart, schematic football coach. You can see, you know, these guys don't make a lot of errors. They make the thing physical, and that's been a mantra and identity for him for a long, long time.
You learn a lot if you could follow in the footsteps of Kyle Whittingham.
Well, you would be smart. And these coaches go, okay, here's Utah, new to the conference. They've only been in the conference since 11 years now. And they've gone from just being happy to be there to being happy that they won the conference championship, played in the Rose Bowl. And that's a tremendous coaching job. And so what is it that they do, and how have they done it? I mean, part of it has been the conference has been down because it's hard to compete against USC when they're at full strength. But, you know, Utah's done everything right. And I think it's stability. I think it's how they're taught and coached. And I think it's the type of player they get fits who they are. And that's, you know, that's a recipe for success when you can have that stability and get the right people in place.
Let's take a quick break here. We'll come back. We've got more to go around the corner. Uh-oh. We have a true false around the corner. Did you guys sneak that in? Oh, boy.
Maybe it's true. Maybe it's not true.
Scott's got a true false he's going to roll out for us. It's a game we like to play. When I say like, I mean it's actually it's hard. Scott makes it hard, so you can play right along. Davis Vision Fall LASIK Sale is going on right now. Get rid of those contacts and glasses, guys. Save $1,000. Davis Vision offers routine eye exams, full-service optical center with prescription glasses, frames, contacts, full line of sunglasses as well. DavisVisionMD.com is the website. We'll take the break. We'll come back. More to go around the corner. Stay with us. Unravel continues, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
It's game week for the Cougars, and the Zone is getting you ready for kickoff. The BYU-Utah State rivalry game. The best football coverage in Utah is on the KSL Sports Zone.
The Utes square off against Oregon State in a massive Pac-12 showdown this Saturday at Rice-Eccles Stadium. Your home for the best coverage of Ute football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Hut, hut, hut. This is Unrivaled, presented by G2G Bar on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Thanks for hanging out with us. Scott, this show's just blowing by, isn't it? Just like every show during football season, right? It seems like. We're going to have a lot of stuff going on tomorrow. We're going to be down at the Murdoch Hyundai in Linden. Scott and I are going to do the first two hours, and then Jake Hatch and I are going to be giving you a Cougar pregame show from 5 to 6, walking you up to BYU's kickoff against the Aggies there for the old wagon wheel. I love the Utah State weekend because it means that there's a Saturday I get to go watch my kids play football. A lot of these weekends, missing a lot of football. The irony of our job is that we watch a lot of football and none of it is of our families. So sometimes we'll be able to sneak it in if it's early enough in the day, if it's a late game. But I'm really excited to be able to see my own kids' football games this weekend. That's just me. Scott's working out of his University of Utah notebook. If you could picture, he's got a spiral University of Utah notebook and the scribblings of a madman. And what's funny is that only he can – it's like a beautiful mind, only minus the beautiful part. It's just a mind. It's just a mind. And, like, imagine that board. The Scott's got all this stuff written down, and I'm looking and – it's got arrows, and it's got like, and then you got this over here, and it's basically the way that Utah can get to the college football playoff on one page, and then he's got these true-false questions on the other.
Well, I was just curious to see, okay, of all the teams ranked ahead of Utah.
Yeah, explain your little diagram here, what you've got.
I just went with the rankings, and I just said, okay, who do all the teams ahead of Utah play? Because they're almost all of them are in the same conference. And every single team ahead of Utah in the standings right now. So from 1 to 11, Utah's 12. From 1 to 11, all the teams play each other. So every team ahead of Utah at this point, there's the potential that they could have they'd actually lose. Now Georgia, Alabama, the only way they play each other is if they make it to the conference championship game. But every team, you know, so Ohio State plays Michigan, and one of those two teams is going to lose. Clemson plays North Carolina State. One of those two teams loses. Penn State plays Michigan, plays Ohio State. USC actually plays Utah, which is a big game. But Kentucky, Tennessee, Oklahoma State, they all play. The only team up there that does not play a team that's in the top 11 is Oklahoma State.
So basically, the table's set. It's a good place to be in. Like, there's a real path to the playoff.
If Utah wins out, every single team that's above them
has to play.
They'll have a loss. I mean, there's a real place for Utah to get into the top 4.
That's good news.
That's basically all that.
So then that's on that. That's on the one sheet.
Want me to flip the other side?
I want to flip it to the other side. The best part was is Scott had to go to the bathroom at work today. And he took the notebook with him, accusing me that I would cheat.
1,000% cheat.
This is like the sign. This is like the George Costanza book that he took into the bookstore bathroom. I don't accept that book anymore. You can't take it. You cannot take this thing into the bathroom and then come back out with you and bring it back into the studio.
Don't touch it then.
No problem.
All right. True or false?
Yeah.
The first BYU Utah State football game was October 7th, 1929, shortly before the Wall Street crash of 1929.
Oh, I didn't think about when that timing was. Because Black Friday was what, the 29th of October? I'm going to say false.
It is false.
Yeah, when was it then?
It was October 7th, 1922.
Oh, so it was. So in my mind, it was a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to get this one.
Okay.
See, you're going to get a couple of these because I didn't know what you had up your sleeve today.
I don't have anything.
Mr. Creativity here.
Okay.
True or false, the wagon wheel has always been the trophy in the Utah State BYU game.
Oh, I think it has been. Yeah. Yes. True.
That's false.
What are you talking about?
It started,
a sandwich? They had the old sandwich.
So before a certain date, that the wagon wheel actually wasn't the trophy.
Oh, what was it?
Well, so that was false.
Okay.
It hasn't always been the trophy. The first wagon wheel game, though, was in 1945 at the end of World War II.
Oh, this is a true false?
Yeah.
False. 1948 was the first wagon wheel.
I know. See, that's, yeah. So, see, it wasn't the wagon. See, you should have known that.
But what was the trophy then?
There wasn't one.
But that's what I said. You said it was the only trophy in this rivalry. The answer
no, I said true or false, the wagon wheel has always been the trophy.
Oh, I thought you meant like it was the only trophy, because it is. Oh. All right. Well, you know what that is right there?
That's
calling BS on you.
No, okay? What it is, you don't
this
listen very
you.
Well. That's what that is.
No. What, is this a bad marriage?
All right.
You just stopped listening to me years ago.
True or false, there have been 3 ties in the series. True or false?
3 ties?
3 ties.
True.
That is true.
Yeah. Yeah.
True or false?
Huh?
Largest margin of victory was 1978. BYU 65, Utah State 6.
I'm going to say that it's – ooh, now I'm confused here. I'm going to say it's false. That was 1977.
It's true.
Oh, shoot.
1977, largest margin of victory.
What? So I was right.
No, it's true.
78. You said 78.
1977.
You said 78.
Just look at my.
Jeremy, go back.
Look at my notebook. Look at my
notebook. During the break, Jeremy's going to go back because you said 78 and I said false. It was 77, and I deserve those points.
Did I say 78?
How dare you go back and listen
to me? It's like no one listens to me.
No, you're not listening to me.
You all are not going to Valters.
You're not listening to me.
I'm going to Valters by myself, and I'm going to talk to myself because I'm the only one that will listen to me.
You
all can go to McDonald's.
Jeremy, pull a tape. He said 78.
I'm done with this.
He just shuts the Utah notebook. He's done playing. Take your friggin' ball that you took in the bathroom and go home. All right. We still have more show to go, though, so don't go home.
Get Ryan on the phone. All right. I want to talk to Ryan from the Dish Pros.
All right. We'll come back. We got more to go around the corner. Hey, David Locke, voice of Utah Jazz, going to join us next. Let's talk some jazz. Then we can all jam together. Stay with us, 97.5 The Eagle.
Let's lock in.
This is Unrivaled.
Yes. Yes.
The teams you live for. The sports you love. With Scott Mitchell and Alex Keurig, presented by G2G Bars on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
True or false?
Huh?
Largest margin of victory was 1978. BYU 65, Utah State 6.
I'm going to say that it's... Ooh, now I'm confused here. I'm going to say it's false. That was 1977.
It's true.
Oh, shoot.
1977, largest margin of victory.
What? So I was right.
No, it's true.
78. You said 78.
1977.
You said 78.
Just look at my...
Jeremy, go back.
Look at my notebook.
You
look
can
at
end the break. All Jeremy's right. going to get go that back. Out of here. I get accused of not listening a lot on this show. Okay.
I couldn't read my notes, okay?
asked me to do it.
I couldn't read my notes.
All right. Well, I love it. It's a fake game don't keep scores on.
I just get concerned. I can't. I don't know.
Let's head back to the NFL offices and get your head tested again.
Do something.
When you do that
right there really throws me in a tailspin because – it said 77, and I read 78, and it's like, why did I do that?
I think that what happened was, like, last minute you were like, I'm going to throw this one digit off,
yeah. And
I'm going to get him. Look,
I guess.
Scott looks concerned. Scott looks very concerned. I'm telling you, let's head back to the NFL offices, and when you go back and get your baseline tests again, I want to go and see what that experience is like. I'll interview you. I'm going to see what that – because you went and did the testing with the NFL, right, already? Didn't you already do it?
Yeah. 2 days.
And it was intensive. Yeah, like you had said.
It was.
And I'm
But it said I was normal, and that That
but that throws you off now. Stop it.
No, Jeremy's now laughing.
That's rude, bro. We're having a real conversation about Scott's health here. You throw a laugh track in on it. How dare you?
I like Eminem. He won't stop.
The show is always brought to you by the folks at G2G Bars. All natural ingredients, no preservatives, plenty of protein. G2G Bars, perfect for anybody who needs that quick, tasty, nutritious boost. And joining us on the program, and now that we're getting right on top of it here, we're into training camp, preseason game on Sunday. You're going to be able to hear right here on the airwaves. We're excited about it. The voice of the Utah Jazz, David Locke, joining us on the show, brought to you by the folks at the Murdoch Auto Group. Locke, what's going on, man?
Not much, guys. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. Now that we're closer to, like, we put our schedule together every week, and I had somebody remind us, hey, don't forget Sunday's the first preseason game. I went, holy cow. Because we just got done with bees, and now we're back into basketball, and I'm really excited. I kind of bought into the idea of this Team 49 and kind of what Will Hardy's jumping into here. What have you been impressed by with being able to talk to these guys for the first time this week during the media days and during the first part of training camp here?
So I agree with your friend, by the way. Sunday being the first preseason game is like, holy cow. So I'm right there with him. Because there's a lot of prep that needs to still be done.
Right.
So first thing I was impressed with just overall was just the quality of all of the individuals. I don't know that is per se unique to the Jazz. You know, there's always the stereotype of an athlete, and I think there's nothing that's more inaccurate than that in this world, in the sense that if you were the dumb jock at this point in sports, you'd lose your route somewhere along the way. The discipline, the dedication, the commitment that it takes is also, I think, you have to have a level of intelligence to be able to be that committed and that dedicated to a craft and to understand how to work. And I think that was evident in the guys we interacted with. They were all thoughtful. They were all polite, actually stunningly polite. They were all introspective. They were willing to share. It was really, really interesting. I mean, everything from Abaji walking. We were in a room. The way it was set up is the broadcast team was in a room. Holly was doing about 4 or 5 minutes, and then I'd step in and do 4 or 5 minutes, and then they'd meet with all of us collectively. So we were all in this room. Like, Abaji walked in and just literally went from person to person and shook hands with each of them beforehand, introducing himself.
That's awesome.
Malik Beasley went and did the same thing. And so that was jet. And then they would just kind of sit comfortably and talk. And Walker Kessler got into it with Thurl on a really deep kind of level on how you block shots. And Stanley Johnson got into just the evolution of a career and how he's trying to find, you know, someone. Finally, he got the suggestion from someone that, you know, find the thing you excel at and be outstanding at it. I just thought all of them, I don't want to leave anyone out, but I also don't want to go list, you know, 19 guys right now. Sexton, I thought, was kind of had that little charm to him with that smile that made you want to be a part of whatever he was doing. You kind of wanted to be around him. He had a real warmth to him. So I was super impressed with all of them. I will share it with you. I think it's really interesting. And I want to ask Scott this. Scott, did you have brothers and sisters?
I had 3 older sisters.
Yep. So that's it. This is so interesting. So I'm a huge believer in birth order. That is like one of the things I really, really, really believe in life.
Yeah, you should have lived with my sisters.
Right. Well, you're the youngest. And so you were trying to fight up to compete and to match them at all times. Only one guy on our entire roster, I believe, is the oldest kid in the family. I think it's Mike Conley.
Wow, interesting.
Every other one is the youngest or has one or two older brothers in the group that they, you know, Colin Sexton's older brother, Jordan. Oh, my gosh, he's the most amazing player I've ever seen. Right, yeah, and you tried to compete with him your whole life, and then you made the NBA. Like, it's such an interesting thing, and this has been the case. I've kept this for almost every year with the Jazz. Frankly, if I was a GM, I would want this information to draft. Like, I think it's very telling. Those players that improve are the younger ones that have been used to fighting, used to competing, used to trying to catch up in their careers. I think it's a really interesting mix.
That is fascinating, because as you're saying this, and I'm thinking about growing up, aside from, you know, fighting my sisters to, like, not put me in a dress, you know, that was one of the big things. But they all played sports. Like, all my sisters played sports, and I didn't play sports against them, but I was forced to go watch them. and it would drive me crazy. Right. And but I was also a lone voice, you know, like they were all sisters and they had, you know, and like I was just a snot-nosed little brother that had no say, no voice, no anything. And so I was actually driven in it between watching them play and play so poorly in sports, and it would just frustrate the heck out of me, to like also creating having a voice and say, hey, look at me, and you know, I got something to offer here. And that was a real thing. When you say this, it was a real thing for me growing up.
Without us even planning this, and we didn't even dive into it very far, but last week when we were talking about Cody Zeller, his dad wrote a whole book. It's called Raising Sons the Zeller Way. And we were like, oh boy, some guy has a bunch of successful kids and he goes, look how I did it. But Cody Zeller is the youngest of those three boys. All three of them were Mr. Indiana, Mr. Basketball. All three of them. He's the youngest, and all three of them won it.
Okay. And which one was the one with the shortest NBA career?
Probably the oldest, yeah.
Yep. The oldest is a rule follower. The oldest is a pleaser and a rule follower. The younger you get, the more competitive. And even to Scott's point, like I've read so much about this, even like the van covers, the van being the car, right? But sitting in the car when there were five or six of you, mom, dad, the three sisters and yourself, you were competing to get a word in then. Well, it's not just sports. It's everything, yeah, right? Yeah. You were just competing
absolutely
to be heard.
Yeah, no question. Like, they just ignored me. They're like, he doesn't know anything. He's our little brother. And so I had no one to, as far as my sisters, like, I went out in our yard and I would throw baseballs against a shed we had to just, you know, and I was always out just kind of honing my craft, not knowing that that's what I was actually doing because I was alone. Like that was my way of expressing myself. That was something that I enjoyed and I excelled at. And it was a way to speak without actually speaking.
Interesting.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So there's an interesting, this is like from a business standpoint, there's an interesting going on right now and I apologize, my right side of my mouth is completely numb right now, so if I sound like I have a lisp today, that's why.
No, it just makes it more interesting.
I just left the dentist's office. but there's in a business standpoint right now with all this remote work, like remote work is not, you know, you guys are used to doing this on a show and all this, but remote work is this new idea and how you stay motivated in remote work. And there's this phrase called the manager of one. And that has actually made, this is a little self-serving, but this has actually made the only child is suddenly, who's always been thought of as, you know, the pampered only child, da-da-da, can't play with others. That is actually now, in a lot of business aspects, becoming the most appealing person to hire because they're very used to being a manager of one, being self-dedicated, playing on their own, doing things on their own, where, you know, you're working remotely. You've got to find those employees that are able to handle that.
Interesting. You know, we listened to all these guys and their media day stuff. We listened to Will Hardy. I think that, you know, nothing really gets kind of figured out with any of these guys till we see them on the court. So what will we see on the court? Who are we going to see? And who are you looking at? And you go, because there's one thing to have a starting five. It's another to have guys you're going to see maybe a lot of in the preseason. So what's the preseason look like normally in the NBA versus or with this team, with this iteration of the Jazz team, you know, going into this thing? Is it you're going to see a lot more guys that, and maybe in a combination you're not normally going to see? What are they going to do right at the top here? Because I feel like they might have a starting five in mind, but sometimes it's about finding good combinations.
So I have no idea what the starting five is, to be totally honest, because there's so many different combinations of how you're going to play it. I thought Will Hardy had some really interesting comments when I was talking to him yesterday in the media session. One of them was, I thought he said, you know, we want to give them enough structure to settle their minds and let them play. And then the other one he talked about was that they have to learn to get to know each other. So that leads me to believe that we're going to see maybe much more in the preseason combinations that he expects to see in the season. Now, you might be a little more gentle on a Mike Conley than you would be some other guys, but maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe you're going to tell Mike Conley, like, actually, I need you to play. Like, I need you to play 26, 28 preseason minutes so you can be around him. Maybe not in the first game. But I suspect that the first, and I don't know, I haven't talked to any of the coaches, so I apologize if I'm wrong on this to them as much as to the listeners, that I suspect the first three quarters will be kind of what they envision as a possible regular rotation in both the next two games, and then that they'll be different, right? Like, hey, let's try it this way, this game, and this way, this. What Will said about the preseason to me yesterday was that he kind of sees this, hey, let's give them enough structure to ease their mind and let them play for the first two games. And then then we have a week to tweak and adjust from there and then play our next two preseason games, and then we've got to get ready for the regular season. So I do think that leads me to believe that you're going to see a pretty heavy dose of you're not trying out 10 through 15 in preseason games one and two, I don't think. I think you're probably for the first three quarters really working what you feel is your 1 through 11 or 12, and then maybe the fourth quarter is 10 through 20 getting some run, and then see if anybody stands out. The other thing I would just say is I'm a big believer in this concept that, you know, you have to have 240 minutes a night. We talked about this last year. Like, do we have 240 minutes? And part of our downfall last year is I don't think we actually had 240 minutes. So do you have 240 minutes of quality basketball? We're a little short right now. And so there are minutes to be had. There's probably 25 to 35 minutes to really be had here by some of these guys. And I think that's pretty exciting. And it could be anywhere from Horton Tucker to Fontecchio to Balmero to, you know, Ubaji to Kessler. And there's just a lot of minutes available at different positions. Frankly, I think one of the most interesting parts of this camp is Jared Butler, Nikhil Alexander Walker got a lot of praise today. You know, I think all these guys, there's just open opportunity here for a chance to get time.
So Will Hardy, like, he's a new coach. I mean, he's a young guy. But he feels like, to me, he knows something that none of us know. I mean, it just seems like he has a clear vision, a clear direction. He doesn't seem like this is too big for him. What's your take on Will Hardy and his first year, his first stab at ever being a coach?
Yeah, I think that's well said. That's pretty clear, isn't it? Like, there's nothing. He doesn't look out of place at all. It doesn't feel out of place at all. I don't think the players feel like they every player is getting asked this kind of question. Like, oh, what do you think of Will Hardy? Because it's the big mystery, and none of us have anything to go off of, and they have very little to go off of. But you haven't heard any of them say, like, he's young, right? You haven't heard that from anyone. You haven't heard anyone say, well, you know, he's learning. You haven't heard that from anyone. It's what I haven't heard that's been more noticeable to me than what I have heard. I've heard a lot of, you know, stuff I'd expect out of players who don't really know yet, but there hasn't been any of that other little kind of stuff that you could hear. So I think you're 100% on this, that he just seems really comfortable in what he's doing. He's, you know, we throw around being bright a lot. I'm probably biased because I'm writing a massive check to the place every year. But, like, his educational background is pretty special. Where he went to college, particularly with the exposure I'm having to it with my son there, is really special. And I think it's important. I think it, you know, I'm probably biased in that regard. But I do think that kind of stuff is really important. And I think the intellectual, thought-provoking, deep thought environment he spent his collegiate years in is one of the special places in the country, and I think it matters.
David Locke, voice of the Utah Jazz, joining us here on Unrivaled as we kind of get going on what this season's going to look like preseason-wise. I know that a lot of people made a lot today about Donovan Mitchell's comments about defense and whether or not, now I'm ready to play defense. When you read that or when you saw it, did you think people maybe took it out of context or that they may have misunderstood? Because he's getting beat up quite badly about this the defense comment he made at Cleveland.
I mean, he said it last year, he said it the year before, and he said it the year before that, and then none of the three did he do it, so I don't know what there is to say. Like, you can keep talking, but at some point you got to do it. I love the kid. Like, let's be honest. Like, I'm not trying to – I'm sounding flippant. I'm just – like, words are useless. Actions matter.
Yeah,
all aspects a lot.
Yeah, I've said it on our show before, you know, because you'd hear the press conferences after the games, and it's like, we know what to do. We know, and you'd list off all the corrections and everything. And for me, it was like, okay, you keep hearing this over and over, so you're either uncoachable, you know what to do and you're not doing it, or B, you can't do it. It's one of those two things. But when you start hearing it all the time, you're like, I don't know which one it is.
So I voiced this last year, actually, so I'll say it again. I got super frustrated with our press conferences last year because nobody said I.
Yeah, good point.
Like, every press conference was we have to do it. No, actually, you have to do it.
Right.
Start with you and then keep going. Because when you say we, you're actually pointing four fingers out.
That's interesting.
Like, I got super tired of that last year with our team. Every press conference was we, and it was, no, I didn't defend tonight. I took bad shots. I didn't move the ball. Not Donovan, all of them. But I got super tired of that last year. I voiced that last year while I was going on, so I'm not, like, this isn't some revisionist history.
Groundbreaking thing, no, huh?
Yeah, like, I'm not, like, I said this last year, too. So, to hear, like, I appreciate, like, what we interact. I'm just not a words guy. Like, that's just not who I am, frankly. So, I'm an actions person. So, a little bit of this, like, I've always kind of, I get what we do, and I love it in the post-game press conferences, but I also, like, dismiss 95% of what I hear in post-game press conferences.
Yeah, or preseason stuff sometimes.
I'm looking for, right, like, to the point of, like, the question about Will Hardy, like, I'm listening, a lot of times it's what we don't hear what's most important, not what we do hear. Right? So we haven't said, oh my gosh, Will's doing a great job, he's sure, it's so funny because he's so young. Like, you haven't heard that.
Right.
That's noticeable to me that not a single player's referenced that.
Hmm.
That means he's in control.
I love it.
Yeah, are you hear the, you know, we expect some growing pains and, you know, he's got some things to figure out. You don't ever hear that either.
Right. Yeah, we understand he's on the journey for the first time with us. Like,
I've heard this. No, he's a new coach.
Right. Like, no, I just, yeah, so, I mean, hey, Donovan said we're supposed to say. Like, this is the same thing that I thought. I think I was on with DJ and PK, and we talked about this. Like, I thought Donovan and Rudy were both outstanding in their kind of post-trade comments.
Yes.
Because they just handled it really, really well in a manner that just ended the conversation correctly. And I was really, really impressed. And frankly, like, someone asked Donovan about his defense. What's he going to say? Like, well, I didn't play any defense for Utah the last 3 years. I don't really plan to play it here because I score 25 a game and make the All-Star game, so why should I play defense? Like, he's not going to say that. So he said what he's supposed to say. He's like, I'm going to play it this year, and he actually did it rather humbly while admitting that he didn't play it last year. So, like, we're killing him for it, but the fact of the matter is he said exactly what he should have. He actually said it humbly. He said it honestly. He didn't pretend like I play. He didn't, like, you know what would have been what we should be, like, losing it for? If Donovan had come out and said, I busted my ass defensively last year and the systems were bad. Like, that would have been newsworthy. Right? Or,
yeah.
Gave everything I had last year on defense. No, actually, you didn't. That was pretty clear. You didn't give all you had last year. But he didn't say that.
Right.
He said, I've got to get better at defense. You know, I need to play better defense than I have in years past. That's a pretty honest answer by an NBA player that's basically saying I wasn't good enough defensively the last few years.
David,
like,
Locke.
Let's admire him for that. Let's actually give him credit for being really truthful.
There you go. And it, you know, there's part of me too that goes, I don't even know if we should even ask David Locke this because this guy didn't play for this team. Like, there's one part where we can keep talking about what happened last year at this team, and you go, okay, moving on because we can't. It doesn't. What are people going to do? Be like, oh, now he's playing defense. How dare he? You know, we're gonna wait till the season starts.
So interesting. I totally agree with you on this. Like, even doing my daily podcast, there was something where I got some information the other day about one of our trades we made and why one of the trades came down the way it did. And then I was like, do I even talk? Like, should I bring this up? Like, or do we just move on? Like, it's like kind of over, right? Like, let's go. Like, and so it's an interesting thing. I still really admire Donovan and think the world of Rudy the person and the game. So, you know, I'm going to be I'm going to watch them avidly, and I'll probably watch their games on delay. Like, I'm fascinated to watch how they play, and I love Bogey, and I'll watch Detroit for that. So, you know, I'm rooting for them and going to watch them all the time.
Yeah. David Locke, voice of the Utah Jazz. You can hear him, of course, with the very first preseason game of the Utah Jazz this weekend on Sunday right here on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone and on the Utah Jazz Radio Network. Locke, thanks for jamming with us. We appreciate it every week, man.
My pleasure. Thank you, guys. It should be a lot of fun. And I read this press release today that said I was doing my 14th year.
Oh, boy.
Did I get this old, this fat?
Yeah, I told Scott. I told Scott not to bring that up. So I'm glad you did, because
you know what you're gonna tell. You know what you're gonna tell me. You know what you're gonna tell me sometime.
What
is that? The biggest story I broke in my young career was about a quarterback signing a free agent deal out of Utah.
You know what? When I was 13 and I looked at it, I go, Scott, who's getting how much money? Gosh,
hey, it's time
it.
To go to break. Let's go. Come on.
All right, Locke, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week, man.
All right, see ya.
All right, see ya. All right, we'll take the break here. We'll come back. We got our NFL roundup around the corner. Got our two-minute drill after that. So much more to go right here on the program. All around the corner right here, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Here we go.
Go get it. Let's go.
That's it.
It's time for the unrivaled NFL roundup. Premium grade A NFL news from a former NFL quarterback.
Who is that?
And, the other guy
on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. It is Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Everything good, Scott? You feeling okay? We can go along here in the.
Yeah, I feel great.
All right,
yeah.
All right, just wondering.
Yeah, I got a lot off my mind today. Some of it was on the show.
Listen, I'm glad you're feeling good. Have you recovered since the wedding? That's my question.
No.
Still dealing
with
the.
Yeah, I'm
still dealing with the.
Some physically tired, emotionally
drained.
Drained. Yeah.
Well,
what is
I'm
it?
Glad.
Morally bankrupt?
Yeah, yeah, that's you. Yeah. Well, just bankrupt now. I mean, just plain old bankrupt after that whole thing.
True.
So the NFL roundup brought to you by Online Trading Academy. Teaches people just like you to make the same moves at the same time as the Wall Street elites. Sign up for their 3-day market timing course, $99 only. Text $99 to 25029. That's 25029. $99. So there you go. Scott, Zach Wilson cleared to practice. Seems likely he'll suit up and play for the first time this year, maybe this weekend. How long does it take you to, when the doctors clear you, they don't clear you and go, I think you could play. Like, if they clear you, it's like, okay, now. Because I always get nervous that they throw him in there too early after an injury like this.
Well, there's never too early in the NFL, and the NFL world today might be different than the NFL world from days gone by, in that the players kind of dictated terms that then. And with so much money and understanding the impacts of, you know, how effective you really play these days, they're just more cautious, a lot more cautious. For what Zach Wilson went through, you know, hey, and I'm not a doctor or anything, but you know, an MCL is usually not very long, and a bone bruise. I don't know, but if you bruise a bone, it's not like you're going to tear a bone muscle. You know, it's maybe a little painful.
The elusive bone muscle.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, how hard can that be? I get really nervous because I see people like Trevor Lawrence making progress, and it's because they've been in there and they've gone through the fire. And you see a lot of these young players, they get a lot of game reps. And Zach Wilson, in his 2 years in the NFL right now, has been injured a lot of it, and that's really concerning to me.
Because of the lack of experience that he's getting because he's injured, or that he's injury prone?
Both. Mm. I mean, the first one is, to me, the most critical one. You just don't learn. He'll have an experience. He'll call a play. He'll see a defense. And he'll go, oh, and there'll be something that clicks in his head. He goes, okay, you remember that for the next time. And you don't get a lot of those opportunities for things to click in your head when you're sitting on the sideline. And you can watch all you want. Man, it's a different deal when you get out on the field and you have to make those decisions. You have to see things and feel things. He's way behind everyone else. And he had no preseason. Way behind people.
Scott, you said you're not a doctor. Last week, Kalani Sitake was asked about, you know, these guys returning. There were so many guys who were hurt. And he goes, you know, guys, I'm not a doctor. You know, I don't know when this is going to happen. I think they're asking about Puka Nacua or many of the other guys who are hurt. And everybody's like, well, I know you're not a doctor, but like we saw the team doctor in his ear for a couple minutes on the sidelines. Like, just tell us what he said, you know. But I mean, we're nosy, right? And then Bill Belichick. I don't know if Kalani Sitake maybe took a page out of his book, or if Bill Belichick's taking a page out of Kalani's book. But he was asked about Mac Jones, and Bill Belichick loves talking to the media in the first place. And here's what his response was:
saw Mac a little while ago. Definitely getting better. Probably won't practice today, but made a lot of progress here in the last, whatever, 48 hours.
Riveting.
So keep plugging away and take that day by day, see how it goes. Just take it day by day. We're not really doing anything differently. Day by day, Phil.
Day by day.
Day by day. That's the plan. Day by day.
Write it down.
Day by day is getting better. See how it goes. Day by day.
All right, day by day.
So,
no, here it comes. Here it comes.
Day by day.
That's, he kept going.
What do I look like? A doctor? An orthopedic surgeon? Like, I don't know. Talk to the medical experts.
You have them, though, right?
What are the medical experts on staff say?
Day
by day.
Listen, see, that's the part where, like, I like the question from that guy. It's like, okay. You're kind of surrounded by
right.
Our team usually has a few medical experts at what their disposal. Day by day. Day by day. I think day by day is taking over for on to Cleveland. That's taking over. Like, well, like, how are things going with it? Now, this is going to, he's going to play the hits. The poor guy, poor media people there, he found a new one. He loves this day by day, and he's going to keep saying.
See, I think people think coaching's like complicated. Right?
What do you mean?
Like, you know, it's intricate. There's a lot of moving parts.
There are. Come on.
And the good coaches keep it simple. It's just day by day. That's all we do, just day by day.
By day. Hey, Russell Wilson.
I mean, look at what Philadelphia is right now.
Mm.
One of the top teams in the NFL. What do they do? They have systems. We just have systems. And we got smart players.
Yes, we do.
And we just go day by day.
I've got another clip for you here. Russell Wilson's taking a lot of heat. You know, obviously, because the offense really hasn't gotten going yet.
Yeah.
With the Denver Broncos, and he was asked because on the Monday night stream, Eli Manning actually on the Manning cast, Eli Manning actually said they should have paid that punter $230 million instead of Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson had the chance to respond today.
Chad Powers.
You talking about Chad Powers?
Yeah, you know, Chad Powers, you know. I'm 3-0 against Chad Powers.
There you go. So he got to respond. Are you talking about Chad Powers?
He had to have been prepared for that.
Oh.
He had to have been prepared for that. His publicist says, here's your – he had to.
His publicist.
But here's the thing.
Sierra's going, hey, like, tell him you're 3-0 against Chad Powers, man.
Right. So here's – and that's how it works in the NFL. The way the Manning brothers are is how it is. Like, people are just...
are dogging folks all the time.
All the time, yes. It's
mostly in good nature, but some of it's not.
No, and Eli Manning, it was all in good nature. It was a little bit irreverent, a little bit unplugged. But, you know, that's how the Manning boys are.
That's the way we like it.
Now, you do. And I think people, you know, kind of take it a little bit too serious, or you can take it too serious, but... That's funny. Russell Wilson, perfect response.
That's a great response. So he goes out there and says, I'm 3-0 against Chad Powers, and so moving on. We're on to Cleveland. Jamal Williams is going to be looking like he's going to get a lot more playing time this week. The former BYU running back, now Detroit Lion. DeAndre Swift, their RB1, injured, not going to be apparently he's struggling here, and so it looks like he's going to be – I mean, Jamal actually, he's been playing pretty dang well since he's gotten in there to Detroit. I think he's just gotten better and better season on season. And it does feel like the Lions are just right there. Like, they gave up a big lead against the Vikings last week. And maybe that's more more indicative of kind of where they really are when you're giving up big leads. But they're there in these games, and I just keep wanting to see this thing turn around.
As much as I've – you know, enjoy Dan Campbell, and I love to hear, you know, him talk and all those things. They don't talk about winning championships. They don't talk about winning. They talk about playing with grit. So the mindset, and I firmly believe this, the mindset is, well, we're going to play hard. And it's like, okay, great. But
that's,
you know,
not good enough. Everyone's going to play hard.
Right. You got to go win. You know, we play to win the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really is the mindset, and so you see them kind of, in a couple of these games early where they're close and they just somehow find a way to lose it. And I really believe a lot of it is because their mindset, we're just here to play gritty.
You know, I think that the I was thinking about this Thursday night game tomorrow night on Prime.
And is that Coach Prime?
Coach Prime. No, I'm bummed because I'm going to be – I mean, I'm not bummed. I mean, it's like, oh, shoot, I have to go cover a BYU game down in Provo versus being able to watch an NFL
RV.
Game. I'm doing the post game in the RV, yeah.
Right.
But I'm saying go down to the – but see, I'm going out of the stadium during the game, and while I'm there, you're darn right I'm going to be streaming that this game because the Bengals and Dolphins game is going to be kind of interesting. Everybody's wanting to see what the Dolphins are going to do. Now, I did hear somebody who I feel like made an argument that you would have been on board with. They were like, the Dolphins just came off of a knockdown dragout with the Buffalo Bills in 90 degrees with 80% humidity, and then they have a 4-day turnaround and have to play on Thursday.
Where?
At Cincinnati.
Oh, it'll be a tough night for them.
Because everybody's like, now this is the best team in the league.
Right, and the Bengals will be gunning for them.
They're going to be ready for them. That's going
to
be a tough
one. It's just human nature. It's hard to overcome that. But speaking of the Prime Thursday night game on a streaming service, I happened to be watching Prime this morning.
Mm-hmm.
You can't miss it.
No, it's all over.
Like, it is all, like, you try to get on a movie and it's like,
click here,
Thursday
watch
Night Football, watch Thursday Night Football,
So far, I've done it every week.
And, you wonder about how streaming services are going to play. Just click on Prime and you're going to be like, you're going to get fed with a fire hose NFL football on streaming.
There you go. All right, we'll take the break here. We got a 2-minute drill around the corner. So when we come back, we'll roll out the 2-minute drill and then kind of wrap up the hour here, and then we'll be back for more. So stay right here, 97.5 VKSL Sports Zone. It's unrivaled. Welcome back. It is Unrivaled, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. Hey, tomorrow we're going to be on the road at Murdoch Hyundai there in Linden for the first 2 hours of the program. And then we switch gears and go to the Cougar pregame show. Jake Hatch and I will take over from there. Unless, Scott, you want to do the Cougar pregame show? You want to do the...
Sure, yeah.
You'll do it. We're going to be in the RV. I mean, my heavens.
If I can do it in the RV, I'll do it. If I can have a cougar tail with a hot dog... In the Cougar
Tail. In the Cougar Tail.
I will do it.
So we actually did a TV thing where
we... Is
that
possible?
Oh, it's possible. Anything's possible with food. Come on.
I'll do it.
I think for a time, Lavelle Edwards Stadium actually sold like a brat that was inside of a Cougar Tail. I don't think it tested well with audiences. Oh. But we did a TV thing a few years back. This is the type of quality TV content that we were responsible for. I go, we got to go down, and we watched how Cougar Tails were made, all right, and we filmed the whole thing. It was like Mr. Rogers. You remember when you used to watch Mr. Rogers? He'd go to, like, the crayon factory. We went to the Cougar Tail factory, which, do you know where they make the Cougar Tails at BYU? Any idea where they make the Cougar Tails?
Where they make it?
Yeah. Because they make them for all the campus and, you know, whatever.
I don't know.
They're in the bakery's in the stadium. That south end of the stadium
is a bakery.
Yeah, it's like
it's a commissary.
And they just that's at least where we watched them make it. Yeah. Huge endeavor, by the way. And they're making this thing, and I said we could up the game on this thing, and we teamed up. I had Jason Edwards from J Dogs. He's the original Jason is the original J Dog. He's the guy who started it up at BYU. And we went over to J Dogs and we filmed putting a couple Polish dogs inside of of the J-Dog Polish dogs. Now, that's quality. Because, right. You don't want just some throwaway whatever piece of meat in there. And I don't think a brat works well in a cougar tail. I think this Polish dog had something going on. I would like to have tried the beef. I didn't think about trying the beef. But, man, what you don't want to do is maple with, like, mustard and stuff. So you do that. You got to be real.
You've turned me off to it. I don't know that I want to know.
I'm just saying, I'll put a hot dog in the cougar tail for you if you want.
No.
You're out of it now? Fine. Yeah. Now, I kind of talked myself off of it, too.
Yeah.
But I remember when we ate it, it was actually pretty good. So, Scott, We got to hit some music here. Right. That means we're in the old 2-minute drill here. So this music means something to the show. It means something to you. So tell us what we have when we do this music here.
Okay, well, I'll be happy to. Late in the football game, got to go in the field, kick, field goal, score, touchdown. Don't have a lot of time, so you hurry. Our show's the same way. Still got a lot to talk about, not a lot of time. So we talk a little bit about a lot of things. Hurry up, finish the show, go home happy with the trophy because everyone gets one of those. And we also get a plethora of desserts, which include chocolate souffle, flan from Spain, key lime pie from Florida, baklava from Italy, gelato from, or not, baklava is from Greece. Italy has gelato. BYU has a cougar tail with a hot dog in it. And, of course, the old cake from Walmart. Apparently is a good thing.
So, first up, I
got something for you.
Oh, you have something?
Yes.
Can I do this little read here first?
Do what you got
to
do.
2-minute drill brought to you by Jerry Seiner Cadillac. Cadillac owners have changed, but luxury has not. Check out the bold lineup of Cadillacs at the Jerry Seiner Cadillac today. Test drive one at Jerry Seiner Cadillac. Yes, Scott, what did you have on your mind?
Well, so Miami Marlins left-handed pitcher Richard Blyer was ejected after he boxed 3 times in an inning. In one
now,
inning.
Now, wait a minute. Did three he get ejected because he argued the box? Oh,
well,
okay.
See, that's what I thought. I thought, you know, once you've boxed so many times,
they
it's
just
like,
go, you're gone, you're dude. Gone. It's like a red card.
Yeah, you're just out.
It's bad.
And he was blown away because he goes, I have pitched over 300 innings using the same move. And I've never been called.
Is it a dumb move?
I couldn't figure out.
Hold
one.
On. So what's
he doesn't
the...
even know what the move was. So is a Miami Marlins pitcher Richard Blyer.
All right. So he's like. So I'm looking at this guy. I'm trying to figure out. This is historic, by the way. Only pitcher since 1900 to have 3 balks
and to get tossed
and to get tossed. Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's. It almost feels like it's one of those things where an umpire's trying to like. Fix the game.
Yeah. Oh, you know what it was? Is they have this point of emphasis. Somebody pointed it out to an umpire, and he goes, "Well, I'm going to call him on it next time." So that's what it was. It's like a guy who's like, it's an umpire who's got something against Richard Blyer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that. That's what it really is. Which
what if
is
he's related to Rocky.
Same spelling. I don't
it
know.
It looks
if
a little
spelling.
Different. Yeah, it could be.
So where's the, I'm trying to figure out what? Oh, the first base. The first it's base. The first, ump
yeah,
is
the
guy.
He's a left-handed pitcher in the stretch.
Right, right. So he's so the first base guy calls a balk. Yeah. And he goes, yeah, whatever. So then he does it again. First base. Look, he goes. It's a balk. He's like, what are you talking about? The home plate umpire is kind of going, huh? Well, you guys figure it out. You guys go figure it out. What does he say? He's like, I've got the ball in the hand. He does it again, and the guy calls a balk again.
But he keeps throwing strikes, too.
I know.
That's the thing. He's like,
and
he's 2 outs in the 8th inning. Why doesn't he go to the umpire?
He balked in a run.
Right. Why doesn't he go to the umpire and say,
what am I doing?
What am I doing that you're seeing?
But you know how all these guys have they have a thing that they do. Like, you've been that guy who's had a thing, and like, I do it a very specific way. Like, this is garbage. I think that ump stinks.
Yeah.
That guy. He stinks. And then, Bobby Valentine comes out and he's like, what are you doing? Like, what are you? He's like, this is not Little League and we're going, oh, we're just going to call it. You better learn how to do it now. It's like, dude, come on, man. Anyway, it bugged me too. I watched that whole thing. It's kind of a bummer. All right, next up on the old 2-minute drill. Kyrie Irving says that he turned down over $100 million to remain unvaccinated last year. Scott, I want you to stomach that again. Now, I guess that's him trying to say, like, that's how dedicated I was to not being vaccinated. Kyrie Irving says he turned down a multi-deal worth $100-something million with the Nets because he didn't want to take the vaccine. He didn't want to get the vaccine. He said, I gave up 4 years, $100-something million deciding to be unvaccinated. That was a decision. Get this contract, get vaccinated, or be unvaccinated, and there's a level of uncertainty.
I don't like shots.
Yeah.
I think I could probably learn to like it for $100 million.
You like $100 million?
Because like it's not like a million shots, or it's not even five shots.
You know what's funny about this? You know what I thought when I saw this story was $100 million not that much because of where we're at.
Wow!
Like because of where we're at in the sports.
What a sports snob you are!
because
$100 million.
Think about because there's part of me that goes, well, Kyrie Irving should be commanding. You know, maybe $35, $40 million a year. Maybe not that much. No, but, like, we see such big contracts. That's where my brain went is. Only $100 million, huh? This is not worth that much. That's how ridiculous it's gotten for us in sport. We hear these giant contracts, and we think the $100 million suddenly doesn't sound like that much money, I guess, compared. That's where I've gotten, Scott. I'm sorry. All right, let's wrap up this hour. We'll come back. We got more to go here on Unrivaled. Stay with us. We continue. 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
This is Unrivaled with Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery. With the access and insight on the teams you're passionate about.
I love it, baby.
Presented by G2G Bars. This is 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. You know, I've thrown, I've thrown three first pitches at the Bees games.
Nice.
And all of them have been, like, they've been in there. They've been good ones.
Awesome.
Now, the first one I was more nervous about.
Yeah.
But the last couple, I just, you have to get up and just, boom, you got to do it. You can't think about it. You don't look at anything. You just, boom, get it in there. And I wouldn't even say, don't even warm up, okay? That's my tip for people who are throwing first pitches. Yeah. I know you've thrown first pitches before, Scott, but the coolest first pitch that we saw this week, Sister Jean of Chicago Loyola fame, that Sister Jean. By the way, she's 103 years old now, okay? She goes out in the wheelchair, and she put an 86-mile-an-hour fastball across across the plate.
Throw him a heater, Sister Jean.
Throw him a heater, sister. Maybe it was less than that, but she got it across.
So I threw a first pitch
at a
Cubs game.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Why at a Cubs game?
They were playing in Montreal.
What does that have to do with anything? Oh, that's that where explains
I was.
It.
World League. I was in the World League.
Oh, that's right.
World Bowl was in Montreal, Canada.
So the quarterback for the Orlando Thunder
threw out the first pitch
of the Cubs Montreal
Expos game.
And
I was like a little kid, and I went around trying to get everybody's autograph.
Oh my gosh! So
I got Ryan Sandberg's autograph. I got Mark Grace. I got Gary Carter.
What year would that have been?
1992.
So 94 was the strike shortened year, and the Expos were 100% going to go to the World Series that year. Like, they had Pedro Martinez. They were like 21 games up when the strike hit, and the season got ruined, and that's one of those. And it's a team we don't have anymore. That's one that if there's a city that is pining for baseball to come back, Montreal might get a baseball team.
Tell you what they had. They had good food in Montreal.
Oh, the old poutine?
French food.
Oh yeah, yeah. You got to do it. That's the problem. You got to do all the announcements in English and French.
Yeah.
If you're in Montreal. All right, Scott. Good showing, Sister Jean. Good showing.
Oui.
103 years old, throwing the first pitch at the Cubs game. We'll take the break here. For Scott, I'm Alex. Jeremy hitting all the buttons. Want to say thanks. We'll be back again tomorrow. Another edition of Unrivaled, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.